Connor here. This is 372 pages. We'll never get back. And this is the final episode of discussing Tyra Banks' doorstop-sized opus, Model Land. Mike, it's been quite a journey. How are you feeling about this final episode of Model Land?
I feel like I did in the third grade. I have this memory burned in my mind, but I don't know if it's, you know, your memory changes or what have you. It's almost in slow-mo, as the teacher said, well, this is our last day, but we have to stay until 12:30, and then you can go home. And then I remember her going, you are dismissed, and bursting through those fire doors.
Yeah.
And like a Terrence Malick movie or something, of the sun like glinting in my eyes, yes, in slow-mo as I heard the roar. And I just saw the summer out in front of me in a flash. And
right.
It's the happiest
all the possibilities of life. Yeah, yes, in front of you.
Yes.
Someone's whispering about grace in your ear as you.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm glad that's good. And I have to imagine that probably kicked in for you a week and a half ago, because as we, you know, if you listen to the last one, you did not do any of the reading for this.
Didn't read a word of it. Oh, man.
That's gotta have felt good. When I didn't read it last time, I was sort of nervous. I was like, I'm hoping this is able to work. And then this time you were just sort of had your feet up with a cigar. Every time I talked to you, you were sort of like laughing uproariously.
Yeah. When I worked at Cheese Factory, I worked at a metal machine shop. In those days where you get off, you actually, and you're on vacation, you're actually thinking about, suckers, I'm throwing a rod in the water and catching bass, and you're back there grinding it out. So that's what was my feeling on this.
Well, in terms of that, your week and a half of luxury, or however long we were off here, in the meantime, you had a momentous event. Your son got married, correct?
I did. If people are mad at me for not reading, just let me remind. Yes, it was my son's wedding, so
right,
I did have a bit of an excuse. Had I pulled out Model Land at the wedding and said, "Yeah, I just got to get this done,"
right,
it might have,
yeah,
thrown a damper.
We need to take pictures with the, you know, we got the grandparent pictures, and you're just like, you know, you're wetting your thumb and flipping through the final pages to see,
right,
what happened to, you know, Piper or whatever.
Mike, stop reading about O'Neill. We need you for this one too.
Right. But yeah, so I was just curious if you know, not that this would ever have ever happened, you know, our ancestors, our grandparents at their weddings, they were just like, you know, everyone was just outpouring of love and happiness and well wishes for the bride and groom. I was wondering if Model Land came up at the wedding in any sort of circumstances, or, you know, the reception or the pre-dinner or whatever.
Well, it's a good question, because I do have, and I don't know if he's going to be listening to this, I have a nephew who was reading Model Land.
Wow.
So we're discussing it. This wasn't at the wedding. This was pre-wedding, because he was not able to make the wedding.
Okay.
But we were at the grill flipping stuff over, and he said, yeah, oh, by the way, I'm listening to your podcast, and I'm reading that Model Land. I'm like, what the, why? He's a busy man, a very smart guy. He's in the Navy.
Wow.
But then he said, I'm trying to read a lot more, so I'm also reading that book you like, C.S. Lewis, Till We Have Faces.
Nice.
I'm like, so you're reading both of those. But he wasn't there, but Model Land was represented. I had somebody ask me, how's that going? Is that done yet? Congratulations, your son is, and is Model Land over? Yeah,
there we go. All right.
Yes,
well,
it did come up.
That's all I could hope for. That's perfect.
Yeah.
We're going to finish it up. We've got dumb sentences. We've got emails from people who took the journey with us. I was just curious if there was any questions you had, or things that, you know, in these final seven chapters, these final 80 pages, things that you were like sort of hoping got resolved in the stretch of books you didn't read.
Of course, I want to know, what's the husband's name?
Oh yes. Mr. De La Creme. I forget the former
Mr.
acrobat.
De La Creme. What was his fate? I didn't read back,
okay,
but I want him to reappear.
Okay. What's his fate? And is, you know, Is he Tookie's real father? Was the question?
Yeah, I certainly want to know that. Okay. Is he drunk as Davy Sow when we see him last? That would be great.
Yeah, he had her toothbrush in his pocket to go off for a paternity test.
Right. Okay. So I need to know what happens there.
Got it.
I also I have a prediction. Can I make a prediction?
Absolutely. Oh yeah. That's...
Naturally, how I want the book to end is Brian to come in.
Sure. Oh, that. Yeah. Right. Yep.
And just make Creamy just like do the scarecrow dance against a wall, you know, just turn her into a bag of blood, and, you know, the gun smoke filling the air. The end. But that we're not going to get that. But my prediction, an actual real prediction, is that there's some sort of a Gollum moment with her mom, where her mom is doing something very evil, and then Tookie acts in some way to try to save her mom. But her mom dies anyway.
Got it.
And then Miracle and Tookie are hand in hand into the sunset.
Okay.
Like, I love you, sis. I love you. Let's try to be better.
Got
That's
it.
My prediction.
Okay. All right. We will work towards that. Other things on the table. I think, you know, you got to wonder if... Because I went and read the part that I didn't read last time.
You did?
Yeah. I just wanted to sort of be up to speed. I think you did a very good job of covering it. There was just, you know, there was just a bunch of bullshit in like the
sure.
man attack chapter that was obviously couldn't cover all that. So it was just good to, I think, establish all that. But other than that, I did not feel like I missed anything. Like
well, I will tell you flat out, when we're done with this, I will not be reading the final chapters of all. Full disclosure.
Yeah, I think there's no reason to do that. I just wanted to not have to flip back and forth
course.
In this stuff.
Of course.
But so Lizzie was, of course, abandoned. The last time she saw Lizzie was picking up a sharp object to presumably self-harm herself with. So
causing the bus crash.
Yep. So we'll want to see how you know her best friend ends up. We also want to see the Piper, her sweetbreads for Hunchy, how that is resolved.
Oh, right, right.
And then the big question on the table was people were sending us memes and stuff like, how do you actually pronounce CL?
Oh, okay,
CL, whatever. Anyway, we'll see if that gets resolved too. We'll see.
Another one is Deca, is that it? Deca slash Bravo?
Yes, Deco slash Bravo.
Deco, okay, Deco, right. Mm-hmm. All right, we need to resolve that as well. Do they get married? Does Model Land have any laws against 14-year-olds marrying? We'll have to figure that out.
Sure. And whether they get married is one thing. Whether they even, you know, interact again is another thing. But based on
whether
her track record...
a single thumb and a single mouth, yeah.
Right.
We need to resolve that.
All right, well, let's dig in. Just to catch people up, the last section... ended with a charred husk crawling over the wall. It was described as a scaly, charred monster with a gnarled, hunched back, which I think it's outright deception, because it turned out that it was not the one character in the book that was a hunchback.
Right. That was a bit of a clumsy beat, yes.
It was not Hunchy, but it was Creamy clutching her doll. And so, like you said, a Gollum-esque figure approaching Tookie, and then she realizes it's Creamy and falls to the ground. And so chapter 41, it's called Stone to Bone and Flesh. It begins with Tookie waking up in her bedroom in Peppertown.
Oh, no.
Tookie,
don't you do it.
Tookie ran her hands down her face, her heart pounding fast. Everything she'd endured and experienced, Piper, Shiraz, and Dylan, Bravo, and Seal, and seeing her mother climbing over the wall, none of it had been real. It was all a dream.
No, no, no. 1,000 times. I reject this. This is a false, false dream thing.
It is, unfortunately. I said it would have been the greatest moment in the podcast history if they had just kicked the previous 500 pages to the curb.
Wow, that would have been, what was it famously? Saint Elsewhere, an entire series.
Oh, yes, right, yes.
They ended saying that it was the dream of an autistic boy looking into a snow globe.
Yep.
Okay.
I mean, but then again, you know, if that was how Lost had ended, that would have been like, all right, tip your hat. They gave the middle finger to, you know, 25 million weekly viewers. Anyway, it was all a dream, and she snaps back to hearing her name yelled, and it's her mom, you know, being like, Tookie, get up. And she is described as a cruddy beast is creamy. And it goes on over the next 12 pages to describe her as cruddy 4 separate times.
Has she ever gotten a break? Is it always been that her face is just like, just a leather purse that's been let out in the sun too long, you know, and that's all the oils have dried out of it, right? She's always just a hideous beast.
Yeah, and purely filled with spite and evil. So no, she has not got a break yet, and we'll see if that happens though, because you know we're wrapping things up. So if there's going to be a tender moment, it's got to happen now. And then a second body drops over the wall, also looking pretty crappy, and it's Miracle, and Piper says, "Your sister is part Legizzard?"
Huh?
I don't know. The Legizzard is what Hunchy was, and right. So this is just meant to, I think, inform us more that they both look like Hunchy as they're climbing over the wall.
Oh, so could have been a joke.
I looked back because Piper also thought Creamy was a Legizzard coming up, you know, due to her hunched back.
Right. we've had hunchbacks. Yeah, right. That is quite a misdirection.
And then Creamy says, "Long time no see," taking Tookie in from head to toe. "You look different." She reached back and yanked the hunch off her back. A cruddy backpack fell to the ground. So that's meant to sort of just be like, that's why you thought it was the guy. Because she was wearing a backpack that looked like a hunch on her back.
Yeah, but that tension was immediately dissipated because she said
creamy.
Yes, right. In the style of a cartoon seeing a ghost.
But then she forcefully pulls Tookie up and says, "Take us to the Belladonna now," Creamy roared. Brown spit spewed from her mouth with every syllable. So to answer your question, no, she's not going to catch a break here.
Brown spit. Wow, what have they been subsisting on?
They had that sort of weird mixture of something that she was not hoarding from the other people. I don't know what would cause their spit to be brown. And then
just to remind everyone, though, she actively murdered people.
Yes.
So you know, we're making like, is this character going to get a break? But it is a murder of multiple human beings. So.
And she not only lured people to the death to murder them, she withheld vital treatments that these people needed as they endured like a sort of Donner Party-esque journey where they were like subsisting on shoe leather. And then she had these like antidotes to these poisons. She was just like, well, they don't need to know about this.
All right.
So then this next description will make more sense knowing that, where it says Creamy rolled her eyes, which after months of starvation looked like deep pits far back into her skull.
Oh my God. The body horror rolls on.
Right. But then we get this moment where it is a slight moment of redemption. They try to go see the Belladonna, which of course involves talking to one of the hundreds of Belladonna statues that are all around campus. And it starts to sing. It says, "Silly Moppet, foolish wench, creatures of abominable stench, you crosseth mine gold path today. So welcome to your dear doomsday. The punishment deserved you." Will Creamy stomped her foot again, interrupting the Belladonna's song. Will you stop that ridiculous singing? So, you know. Lured people to the death, but
sure
does interrupt the one of the dozen songs in the book and slam poetry session. So it might all cancel out.
One thing I had hoped for that I didn't mention at the beginning was that their songwriting would get better. It is not better.
That's not going to happen.
Okay. I thought maybe the last few pages they will have learned something. No,
yeah, they did not. O'Neill picks up an acoustic guitar and sort of puts his own spin on Wonderwall or something. I don't know.
Yeah, or just that the, it turns a little more Dylan-esque with its insane imagery, but
right.
No, clumsy rhymes and crammed in syllables are still the still ruling the day on the song.
Third grade poetry, yep.
Yeah.
But then as they're about to sort of gain access to the Belladonna's chambers, but then she catches Bravo's eye across the campus and he licks his thumb and pantomimes wiping her eyebrow.
Good Lord.
And her Tookie's mouth fell open. How dare he do that of all things? She made up her mind she would never forgive him. Ever. You might as well be dead to me, Bravo. So that's based on him, you know, on him saying it was all a bet that, you know, that I said I loved you and wanted to escape with you.
Oh, okay. So she didn't have the realization. I think we as readers had the realization that he was just saying that, but she did not. So she still thinks that it was just a bet?
Yes. And I think that in the context, it wasn't it like she said, I'm escaping, I'm going to leave without you, and then he said that?
Yeah.
So, yeah, right, yeah. If you've ever seen a romantic comedy, you understand how that works, but maybe they're the one thing in our world that does not exist in Model Land. They had, like, the World Series, and, you know, people had Shackleton's, you know, voyage to the South Pole all existed in this world, but maybe romantic comedy tropes don't.
However, if it does end, I'm not placing it high, with Tookie saying to a cab driver, like, I got to get to the airport. Deco / Bravo is leaving. Do you love him? I sure do. Well, then let's get you to that airport. If that happens, I'll say a win, and then I'll read the last chapter.
Yeah, and then he turns to, looks in the rearview mirror, and it's Hunchy. And then they heard them. They enter inside. They heard the calming, soothing undulations of the unseen voices chanting ooh and ah. Tookie glanced at her friends. The Belladonna had ordered them to the Ua? Remember the Ua?
No, I don't remember the Ua.
I don't remember what happened there, but there was a building called that, and they I guess have been there before. But it said CL's response to that is, guess Madame Belladonna needed her butt wax before her big 7-7 speech.
What the hell does that mean?
Well, you know, it's the big day of the 7-7 tournament where they determine who the next Intoxabellas are going to be. So I guess if you're going to give that speech, you need to have your butt waxed.
Sure, but that's already happening, right?
Yeah, everyone's gathered in the stadium out. And they're sort of doing we got to get there, but first.
Guess she needed her butt waxed.
Yeah.
All right. And that you do it in the ooh-ah?
Sure. That's, if you're going to get your butt waxed in Model Land, you got to go to the ooh-ah.
Oh, is that the big room where they all laid out on slab tables and they were naked?
Oh, yep. That must have been where they made the 13-year-olds get naked in front of each other.
Oh.
Sure.
Yes. Okay. Gotcha.
A gauzy curtain materialized in the corner. Persimmon stepped through it, her hands clasped at her waist. As soon as Creamy saw her, she let out a gasp. Good Lord, what is that? She's naked and has black eye whiteies, Creamy, Miracle said fearfully. Tookie nudged her. That's Persimmon, a mannequin. Miracle, have some respect. More like persecution, Creamy muttered. So her...
Oh, Creamy's taking over those great jokes.
The jokes from Zarpessa and Chase.
Usually given to Zarpessa and Chase.
But so what do you think Persimmon's reaction to this burn will be?
I'm trying to think of Persimmon's character. She does not have roller skate feet.
Nope.
Is she 60% woman and 50% or 40% man?
I think that's NARS. It was hard to imagine these because I was sort of, you know, I was picture, you know, they're mannequins. So you're thinking of mannequin and sort of plasticky.
Right. But she's also, isn't she a, what do you call them? She's like a teacher. Did she pull Zarpressa, I'm going to call her Zarpressa,
sure,
out of the refrigerator when she crawled in there to eat
maybe
Model Land snacks?
Yeah, that's possibly. She could be just sort of like a gopher, you know. She's a behind-the-scenes kind of figure who you know, keeps everything running while the rest of the faculty messes around. Anyway, her reaction to being called persecution, Persimmon flinched slightly. So, I mean, I guess that's really all that warrants, but we have a lot of understated reactions coming up.
Your name is Connor, of course, but I'm going to call you Con Man. I saw you flinch there.
Yeah, so right.
stung you.
It hurts more than that flinch let on. So then they approach another statue of the Belladonna. As Creamy approaches it, it starts to like crumble. And then Dylan says, ooh, you broke it. And as we say at the Boo Big Teak Nation, you boo break it, you boo buy it, baby.
No, we don't say that. Nope. There is actually a sign that says behind the counter, it says, if you ever say this, you are immediately terminated.
Right. Or if you ever say it correctly, because it's, if you're going to have a saying, it should be something that isn't a tongue twister.
Yeah.
And this, I think this might have been in a some fanfic at some point in time, but it says there was something inside the statue's stony interior, something the crumbling rock was slowly revealing, Five human fingers emerged from their slate shell. A thin rose gold sleeve made of the finest silk appeared next. Then a swan-like neck and a pair of round, pert breasts.
Oh.
So that's
the Lord. Come on,
man. Donna. There we go. I don't know if she's actually nude or not, but I just don't understand what the whole statue thing was, because throughout the whole book, that was sort of what was happening. The statues were sort of doing the observing from afar of the Belladonna.
I never hooked on to that any more than I hooked on to the obelisks, which were, of course, explained. But a physical layout of Model Land, I would go mad trying to recreate it.
Right.
I couldn't do it. It would be like trying to draw Atlantis or something from the scraps of descriptions. I have no idea what's happening in Model Land.
Because it seemed like any time that there needed to be a statue of a Belladonna nearby to like catch their eye and like glower at them, there was. So do they just have like a guy with a clipboard who is just like looking at all the sight lines in every room being like, I can't see one here. They're like, there's one 2 feet over. Well, I can't see it from here. You need to put one in this window so that if Tookie can ever like, you know,
right.
needs to feel it breathing down her neck. And it ends with him, the Belladonna, saying, how dare you demand to see me? And so we don't know if there's any, you know, if she's just sitting there all day encased in a statue. I mean, like I just said, she's making a speech and had to get her butt waxed. So if she was just like delaying to the last minute in the green room, sort of like a real like diva of a performer would be.
Oh yeah. Is she like one of those, you know, fake statue people? She has to put on the silver paint and then stand on a 10-gallon bucket until somebody passes by.
Wait for somebody to give them a dollar and then they take it. So it seems like it was quite a normal statue, but that's how chapter 41 ends. We can go right into chapter 42. Les trois copines. I don't know.
The three friends.
Okay.
Copines.
Well, that makes sense now. It's
yeah.
It says, ooh, all the Unicas said at once. Boo, the Belladonna answered like a seductive ghost.
Oh, I think that was in fanfic.
Yeah, I think whoever submitted the fanfic pointed out that it was a robot pimp-esque modifier to any given sentence.
I think I gave that to you and was hoping to win on. I don't remember. I think you bit at that.
Okay.
She said, like, seductively, you might have bit. We'll have to go back and check the tapes.
Nice. And so, you know, I think we had either speculated or thought that the Belladonna might end up being a fraud, you know, just based on knowing how all of fiction has worked up to this point. But it's
how the Wizard of Oz works, yes.
Yes. But a heavenly glow emanated from the Belladonna as though she was not a human but a goddess. Her hair was wild and black and fell past her waist. Her skin was olive, her cheekbones high, her lips defined, and her eyes the darkest coal black irises Tookie had ever seen. The expression on her face was one of utter poise, but also extreme annoyance. She was beyond striking, possessing a divine, otherworldly type of beauty. That's kind of
well,
a bummer.
Yeah, unfortunately, we can't do an optical challenge, but to be very, very... How poised was she?
Utter poise.
Utter poise, but also very annoyed?
Extreme annoyance, yes.
That is... that has to be about as subtle as the smize.
Sure.
that she does. I do not understand the smize. She appears to just slightly widen her eyes, I guess, or something.
I mean, a pursed lips can indicate annoyance, but also, you know, having your shit together. I don't know. The reaction of everyone here is Shiraz dropped to her knees, and the rest of the girls followed. Supernatural! Piper blurted out reverently.
Oh, boy.
I'm not sure if she's okay.
Does someone blurt something out reverently?
And it's just the word supernatural.
Supernatural?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
It must be that poise that's really working miracles on them. But then
I know that people go into like the Sistine Chapel and then they blurt out supernatural, but very reverently. And then everyone in the church turns and goes, shh,
yes,
stop that.
Those guys who say no photo just say, no saying supernatural reverently.
Right.
But then she and Creamy start trading barbs. The Belladonna, I'm just going to say Bella, you know, just because that's an abbreviation. Hey, what's with this Creamy nonsense? Is that what you're making your children call you? If I'm seeing what I think I am, you're a far cry from Creamy. Clumpy is more like it, or Craggy. So the quips are just not, you know, at a high level at all.
And can we also return to the fact that you're writing this, so you're making her hideous.
You're making
and
her...
And then the final chapters, you're having people make jokes about how she's hideous.
Right, and she's correcting her own joke right after it. She says clumpy and then immediately workshops it. Like, you know, you can make this goddess be right the first time. But then Creamy says, at least my soul isn't rotten. Hey, listen up, everybody. There's a rumor going around that the Belladonna's soul is as filthy as a truck stop urinal. Word has it that she traded it away. So I'm not sure which one it is there.
Okay. Well, first of all, good to know that truck stop urinals exist in Model N.
True. Very. Yeah.
And then, so Chad and Dale would be very, very at home there.
Right. Yeah. There's some discarded knickknacks in the urinal. But then she also traded it away to someone that she hopefully, you know, saw it sight unseen or something. But so I'm not sure which one that is.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you have a soul that's as dirty as a truck stop urinal, if you can make that trade, good on you.
so we get a clip. Belladonna sort of shows him a projection. She's like, listen, I'm very busy. I need to go attend to this big ceremony. She shows him a view of the stadium. This is another, if truck stop worlds exist in this world, truck stop urinals, this is another thing of this exists in this world. In the stadium, the 7-7 upper-class Bellas stood in a nervous huddle in the wings, many of them holding hands and chanting calming prayers. So we always ask this, you know, in Star Wars and Harry Potter, people talk about praying, and, you know, just to who?
Yes. One? Many?
Yeah.
Three? What's happening?
It's never clear. So we get more of the atmosphere of the stadium. It says filing in through the side entrances of the stadium were dozens of acrobats and exotic jungle cats, lending a circus-like atmosphere.
Yeah, well, there you go.
It really does make it a circus-like atmosphere to have circus things happening. And
the sad clown swept up a spotlight into a smaller spotlight. It was circus-like.
And then, so I guess they show some zoom in and stuff. And so, of course, in this entire stadium, they somehow focus on Chase and Zarpressa. Piper says, can they really not see us? Tiptoeing over to the seats and waving her hand through Zarpressa's transparent hologram. She stuck out her forefinger and thumb and mimicked crushing Chaste's and Zarpessa's heads. And in an uncharacteristic way, she said, take that, bitches! Who's translucent now? someone did write in an email pointing out that that's like a notable Kids in the Hall recurring sketch.
Yeah, I would crush your head. It was a weird little... Yeah.
And then Dylan sidled up next to Piper, lifted her train, and pulled aside her leotard bearing her butt. She wiggled it at the girls. This is for you, ladies. Some boo-big teak booty.
What? How long did this take? She lifted up her thing, then pulled down...
Lifted her
leggings?
Train. So I guess she's wearing a sort of wedding-like dress, pulled aside her leotard, and that was it, I guess. Those are the two layers of her outfit. But it's... this is sort of like, listen, we are trying to have to wrap this thing up here. Like, we don't need head crushing and ass exposure.
That is very strange.
But then we get some advancing of the plot. Creamy says Bella is still holding a grudge after all these years. So there's some history between these two.
Oh, well, well, well.
She says...
Roommates?
You're right, the Belladonna says. My heart has never healed and never will, but revenge is so sweet. My bringing Tookie here instead of Miracle made you catch the Pilgrim Plague, and that tastes so good to me.
Oh, dear.
Mm-hmm. And then Creamy's gaze landed on Miracle, who was watching the 7-7 stadium pre-show dance with amazement. Her toes tapped to the music, her arms wriggled, and her head bobbed. Dust and soot flew off her body like she was a rug that had just been shaken out. Miracle! Creamy shrieked and slapped Miracle across the face. So she's upset that she's like ruining their big moment by dancing, as she's always doing.
Okay, can I make a prediction?
Please, yeah.
I think that Creamy and the Belladonna were after what's his ass, the acrobat who drinks, you know, old Dr. Forrester whiskey from the bottle and puts toothbrushes in his pocket or whatever.
Old Flabby Leotard?
Yeah, old Flabby Leotard. All I think right, they were okay. both chasing that down, and they got into it.
All right. Well, people who have read along can are already assessing that. People who are not can make their own predictions, too, and we'll see relatively soon, I think, whether that is true or not. I think you're sort of on the right track here, though.
Or is she actually a Legazard and her hump is going to grow? I don't know.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I mean, it is Model Land. You do sort of have to see in, like, you know, what if a, you know, tusk grows out of her, you know, the back of her throat and, you know, that they impale O'Neill on it or whatever. Like that, you know, the more exactly. demonic, the better, you know.
Yeah, and that was just and that's a metaphor for some designer that she worked for who made her wear like pearls that she didn't like and were too heavy. So right. someone grows an ivory tusk out of their neck and turns into a rhinoceros. Yeah.
Yeah. And that tusk was Cindy Crawford. Speaking of grudges, we haven't really had an unhinged rant against actresses in like 300 pages. That sort of fell off pretty quickly.
Maybe during the writing of it, like, she befriended an actress and was like, all right, I better lay off.
Glenn Close asked her for coffee and they buried the hatchet about some grudge from 20 years ago.
Yes.
All right. So let me see just where we were in this. The Belladonna and Creamy start like pulling on Tookie. You know, they're like, because Creamy's like, you know, she's coming home with me. And the Belladonna says she's property of Model Land now, using Tookie as her tug of war rope. Tookie shifted down the hallway a little more. Back and forth they went until they were halfway down the hall. How will Tookie ever escape?
She runs. No, she can't run with her feet. She's always tripping. The pouch?
Finally, Tookie broke free and sprinted towards the flashback females. So
that's okay, her. So she can sprint. All right.
And so the flashback females are those Minority Report style gurus that let you relive, you know, a memory.
Oh, right. They were the ones who were like fused together somehow.
Mm-hmm. And they showed you these horrible events, like the woman who arranged the Bollywood musical and got like an entire family of stagehands killed.
Right. Yep.
So we're running back to there, and because Creamy wants to access a memory, and then the Belladonna yells, "Nars, I need you. Come now. There's an intruder in my UA."
Oh, out of context. Yes. My heavens.
And so they start to watch a memory. Creamy triggers it. The book does point out that she is still caked in filth as they watch this. Mm-hmm. It's just important to remember that so we have that context. I don't even know what to picture other than, you know, someone who's just, you know, crawled out of like a Double Dare pit or something, you know, where you've been slimed or something, or just a soldier who's crawled through the trenches or something.
I think if we just assume that everyone looks like Schwarzenegger in Predator at the end when he covers himself in mud to disguise himself. That's what everyone looks like. Yeah. Everyone is just covered in muck and filth.
Right. Except for the ones who are, you know, beautiful in a supernatural way.
Yeah, well.
One or the other.
Whose pert breasts are suddenly revealed.
Oh, imagine if Schwarzenegger crawled out of the Predator pit with pert breasts.
Oh, imagine it.
There we go. Let me just see. There are 80,000 results for Arnold Schwarzenegger. With. And so the memory shows two 18-year-old girls, and I think everyone there sort of realizes that one is obviously the Belladonna. She looks just like her. And there's a blonde girl and a brunette. The brunette is Belladonna. The blonde says, "You always manage to win war of words, but never lose friends. That's a gift, LaDonna," the blonde said, reaching over and giving the brunette a friendly hug. LaDonna, Tookie thought. Oh my God, is that the Belladonna's real name? Tookie proves to be very slow on the uptake throughout this next section of flashbacks. So the Belladonna was fortunately named LaDonna. That made it a bit easier to transition into the world of being the Belladonna.
So is Tookie now going to act for the next few chapters as her dumbest reader to help her through the process?
Yeah, I guess that's
it. Get it?
Yep. She's okay. Going to be the over-the-top announcer who's being like, "Please, everybody, here's what's happening.
Please remember."
And so this hopefully makes sense, what I'm about to tell you here. the Belladonna, LaDonna, sees a statue of the Belladonna, but this is just when she was just LaDonna. CL mm-hmm. says, that's the Queen Belladonna, our Belladonna, LaDonna's mama.
Wait, what?
So in the flashback, LaDonna, who is the current
Belladonna,
sees a statue of the Belladonna. That's the Queen Belladonna at that point in time, who is our Belladonna's mama.
Oh, okay.
It's not that complicated. The book made it sound, you know, it did a very terrible job of trying to describe it to people.
So do the Belladonnas, again, does it answer the question, do they get encased in statue material on a regular, or they become the Belladonna, and so then they're like, well, let's get you in that, you know, Harrison Ford freeze bullshit.
Right.
Or whatever.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I don't know if it's like a fungal network of like mycelium where once you're in a statue, you then can, you know, control all the other statues and sort of use them as your eyes and ears.
Because
there was that one scene where like Seal went into the Belladonna's office and she was sort of doing an angry police chief thing, being like, God damn it, Seal, one more screw up like this and I'm going to have your, you know. I don't know if she was in a statue as she was yelling at her like that.
So is it like a guy with a pallet cart? Like, push me over there.
Yes. It's the guy that carries around Oscar the Grouch, I guess.
Yes.
That's what the mannequins do, I suppose. But anyway, in the memory, the brunette girl, a brunette girl walks up and she's their friend and says, nice vestido, girly. And they say, you're definitely going to be chosen to be a 7-7 wearing that Lata. Lata. The name ran through Tookie's mind like a siren. And then she says, I hope so, because if they don't pick me, I think I'll literally die, Percy. Someone in the room gasped. Tookie turned and saw Persimmon the mannequins in the corner. Her head shook with sorrow. Was she Percy?
Oh, my God.
So dumbest reader might have been giving her a bit of credit here. Like, you know, dumbest reader who just, you know, got hit on the head with a mallet or something.
Wow. So, all right, never mind. Go forward. I have so many questions.
Sure. Some of them will be revealed. So then Tookie's gaze moved to the brunette girl again. There was something vaguely familiar about her mouth, her eyes, the color and tone of her silky skin. So remember, she's observing someone named Lata, right?
Sure. Yes.
Do you remember her mother's name? It was Cremalot. So, I mean, that'd be like, you know, my mother's name is Sandra. So if someone was like, hey, Sandy, I'm like, Sandy, why Sandy. Do I, I'm that not is, sure about the.
That is ringing a vague, vague bell.
She looks a lot like a younger version of my mother, this Sandy. Tookie was too scared. There's something vaguely familiar about her mouth, her eyes, the color and tone of her skin. What else do you need? But Tookie was too scared to admit the undeniable truth. Then her gaze returned to the dress and her heart stung once more. It was the dress Creamy had specifically picked out for Miracle for the Day of Discovery at the Jerk Boutique 1 year ago. So a year has passed. Creamy had chosen it, touched it, even though it was vintage old. Tookie's stomach turned over as the weight of what she just discovered finally hit her. So everyone else is looking at Tookie here being like, hey, you know, why are you taking so long to parse this? Your stomach is turning. Your heart is stinging. And then it gives us the full reveal in text. Lata was Creamy, her mother, and Creamy the Belladonna and Persimmon had once been best friends on their way to becoming Intoxabellas at Model Land.
So, question.
Sure.
Rising to a Robert's rules of order, rising to a point of order. So her stomach is turning. She's being shocked by these revelations. Her mother had crawled over a fence like Gollum,
right.
as an otherworldly monster, like a creature spitting brown fluid at her
mm-hmm.
and screaming, and now she's like suddenly like, oh man. Things have really changed for me.
Yes, right.
It seems like there were signposts along the way that there could be some things coming up.
Yeah, I mean, so that was a year ago. So that's an important thing to realize. She hasn't seen her mom in a year, and then she just emerges like that. It's hard to do a pin something like that. But yeah, if you're went to college, it's been a year, and then like you know you're. Like high school prom date shows up on campus or something like that, you'd be like, well, this is alarming. let alone being burnt to a cinder or whatever she looks like.
Yeah, that might have been the time to have your stomach flip and, mm-hmm. you know, have the heart strings go, whoa.
Right.
Yeah.
But then these gradual revelations might not be as big a deal. So that's how that chapter ends. Chapter 43 begins. We're going to have a lot more of these flashbacks. This is going to be the sort of crux of this whole final section of the book. Is a bunch of flashbacks.
What a great way to structure drama.
It really, really is. Especially as there's like something happening off screen, like the 7-7 tournament. Everyone's just sitting there. they're right. sitting there while yeah. this happens. So people are just like looking at their watches, praying, obviously. There's jungle cats. And then LaDonna, Creamy hissed. Cremolata defecake, the Belladonna answered.
Everyone gets a shot in. This is good.
Well, that's Tookie widened her eyes, hardly believing what she was hearing. Cremolata and defecake? Disgusting. So that was her birth name, her maiden name.
Wait, that wasn't a joke?
No, that turns out to be what her she came from, a long line of defecakes. So,
okay.
I guess you know your fate's probably a little bit sealed at that point in time.
Wow. Okay, so that's like the again, I believe I've said it on this podcast that I had a guy in college whose last name was spelled A-N-N-I-S. And so you would say, hey, I don't want to say his first name.
Yep.
Hey, Anus. They go, no. It's Anus.
God.
So defecake seems like there might be a
That's the exact a opposite take of on yeah, what I think I experienced. There was a girl who was like lived in a next door to us in college, and her last name was Smelly. And so, like, you know, I think she was, you know, like on radio and stuff. It was like, I'm Kelly, you know, that's my pen name, and got married very quickly to be like, you know, who's got a better last name? You? All right, let's do it.
Yeah.
Unfortunate. Probably had a rough go, but not as bad as right. Defecake.
Defecake. Okay.
So, Creamy, is this, oh, sorry. Tookie wonders why her mom never told her that, and she said, that's just one minor detail of my life. I just left it out. Get over it, as she shrugs. And then she says, Creamy, is this how you know so much about Model Land? Is this how you knew Miracle was going to get chosen? And then the narrator says, Daughters of Intoxabella has had almost 100% chance of getting into Model Land. After all, higher than the chances of Smize Finders. So that's good info to bury on page 504 here.
We went through the entire first third of the book was all about Smize as being flushed through the water supply.
Giving you, yeah, we had a listener parse the odds of like what that would be, and it turns out it didn't matter at all.
She's a legacy. She's a flounder from Animal House. Yep. She has to be let in.
Then they go to another flashback, and this time they're getting ready for a fashion show, and it turns out that LaDonna, the current Belladonna, was in love with a civilian, which is forbidden. CL lets us in here. She says, she's rubbing her palms together and says, ooh, the cardinal rule at Model Land is that a Bella cannot date a civilian. So that's good information to bury on page 505.
Right. So wait, I have to go back. So CL's standing there watching this too?
Everyone in the room right now is Cremolata Defecake, the current Belladonna, whose name is LaDonna, Manicant, Persimmons,
sure.
Then
Percy.
The CL, Tookie, and then Dylan, Piper, and Shiraz, the friends, the Unicus, sure. they're all there.
The Unicus.
Everyone
sure.
who needs to be there is there.
Okay, and CL has nothing to do. CL's story is already told, right? She killed her friends, or got them killed, and buried them under
the
obelisk.
So, yes.
So she doesn't have any... She's not part of this little circle. The current Belladonna. Okay. All right. Bring it on.
And so what's her name's? LaDonna's in this flashback. Boyfriend is there. And they're just like, you know, she's making eyes at him. He's just like the nicest guy, even though, you know, it's a forbidden love. And then LaDonna goes on stage to do her runway walk. And that's when, in the flashback, Cremolata Defecake makes a move on him. The hands are stripping her down to her underwear, and she flutters her eyelashes at LaDonna's love. Hey there, she purred at him. You know dating LaDonna is wrong, don't you? The man looked away, seemingly uncomfortable at staring directly at Cremolata and her overt semi-nakedness.
Okay.
That's a powerful phrase.
It really is.
Just a bunch of stupid rules, he murmured in a deep voice. I like breaking rules too. Cremolata edged closer to him, trapping him against the wall. The magical hands followed, pulling at her bra straps. In seconds, she would be topless. I suppose, the boyfriend said. He hopped up on a low beam that surrounded the backstage area to get farther away from her. His balance was perfect.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So there's quite a bit of I don't know, back foreshadowing going on.
Magic hands are untying her or undoing her bra?
Yeah.
Huh. Are that a new thing? Have we heard magic hands?
Well,
before?
The magic hands were like the things that would dress you in real time during these things. And magic hands, you know, we compared them to like those gloved hands that are like always on levers in Dr. Seuss.
Oh, okay. Right. Okay. But which is different from the light that's like an anaconda going, a hungry anaconda.
Right, which is different okay. than the magic belts that also confirm into like making sexy gestures if you're chased at people.
Right, or the magic pouch that turns into candle wax or whatever. Okay, goofy. Got it straight now.
Yep. We go to another flashback. This one was partially covered in real or fanfic. That's where someone's groaning and grunting in a bathroom stall.
Yes.
Then there's a large splash and the cries of a baby. And it says, it wasn't the sickened cry of a young woman wrecked from tainted food. It was the cry of a tiny baby emerging into the world. And the new information we have here is that it's LaDonna's baby. And Percy's there in the stall with her. And then the Queen Belladonna kicks in the door. So I guess she's not a statue in this scenario. But she takes the baby and says she's going to give it to the civilian father to raise, the guy that Creamy was trying to seduce in the last scene. And then, this is not going to make any sense to you. I went back and reread a bunch. This all happens in two pages, you know. But she gets really angry at Percy for hiding it from her. But there was no indication that Percy ever hid it from her or anything like that. But
oh wait, the baby is LaDonna's.
The baby is her. Yeah, so it's her granddaughter. It's LaDonna's her daughter's baby.
Right. Okay. So they give it to Creamy, the Belladonna gives it. The statue
Creamy,
gives it
to LaDonna's civilian boyfriend.
Oh, okay, yes, yeah, right.
And then she says that because Percy hid it from her, which you know, I have no idea if the Belladonna she knows who Percy is. Like she's just like I don't know if they have a relationship or anything. It's all happening very fast. She says she's going to expel Percy, and then she says, "Well, you know what the other option is, don't you?" And then Percy. Tearfully assents to that.
Gotcha. Okay.
And then
makes sense.
We get a flashback again. To they keep like coming in and out of these flashbacks, and they like exchange barbs, and then they go back into another one. So we get to the doorstep of LaDonna's boyfriend. He stares into the basket at the tiny creature inside, slowly shaking his head. So the baby is left there. You might recall that's how Harry Potter came to be with the family that that was he was raised by. He shakes his head. Then gracefully, he swooped down as though he were about to do a handstand and took the baby in his arms. Eh?
Sure.
Yeah. So
swoop down. I guess bending over, I guess everyone, I will always assume if they're bending over, they're going to do a handstand from now on.
But then, so we've had, see, they've laid it on pretty thick here, but then suddenly, of course it happened suddenly, Tookie has a terrifying epiphany, the acrobatics, the grace, how he'd spun LaDonna around at the fashion show so effortlessly. Was it possible, really possible, that this was Kris Kremkrobat, her father? So again, Tookie is just sort of standing there drooling as everyone else is like, yeah, okay, it's her father, we got it, etc.
Yeah, she was taking her bra off, he hopped up on a rail and balanced on a perfect, that's him.
Yeah, exactly. Curious, Tookie walked deeper into the room, the flashback room, and waited for her vision to adjust. When it did, she saw a huge space full of leather, buttons, soles, laces, and shoes on every surface. She crept up close to the baby in the memory. The little bed the man had just laid her in was made of taut leather. It's a big shoe. A strange feeling came over Tookie. Wait a minute. The baby was cradled in a shoe, and she knew that shoe. I know that man.
Hadn't she already figured out who it was?
Well, they did a severe amount of unnecessary misdirection here. because the Belladonna's boyfriend, the father of her child, wasn't Kris Kremkrobat.
Oh, come on.
Again, this happened in the span of a page or two. It was, he was...
Dot, dot, dot.
Dot, 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 yes. Wingtip. Remember Wingtip from like page 30?
Yeah, of course.
The homeless guy who keeps a pair of shoes tossed around his thing and pushes a cart and stuff.
What?
Yeah. Who had it been mentioned in 520 pages probably?
I mean, Brian has more of an effect on this book than Wingtip.
Yeah, Brian called her Dookie at least. She spoke to him.
O'Neill is looming large compared to this. Come on.
So, I mean, you know, it kind of makes sense that they gave him, you know, a name and did pay attention to him. But there's been so many other characters that have been named and have not affected anything, like those the me likey girls. You know, they're never going to be mentioned again, by the way. So they're nobody's father.
Oh, so they were just there. Remember, we have so many laughs from them. So they were just there. They're the wacky neighbors or something coming in and
they steal
the door
things.
Open
and then they talk in they finish each other's sentences.
Oh, okay. So that was just for fun. Okay. Now I know what that was supposed to be.
Right. Well, I mean, they didn't die horribly like the hairy girl and her mother, Abigail. So, but yeah, you're either, that's how she keeps you on your toes, man. Anyone could be incredibly important or, have absolutely no payoff whatsoever.
Wow. Well, again, I mean, it's come up before. That is very Dickensian, right? Except that in Dickens, it makes sense and is satisfying.
Sure, that's two major important things.
Yes.
Creamy scoffed and looks away and says, oh, that man is disgusting and always has been. That man has a name and you know it, the Belladonna shrieked. It's Ray Fay.
Ray? Yeah? Wingtip Fay?
Yes. So they make a huge deal out of naming Wingtip. I'm not gonna disguise this or anything, but we never see him again.
But why the pun on Fay Wray? Is that just
A thing? I don't know what
Fay Wray.
Oh, the movie. Oh, right, King Kong.
King Kong.
Well, I didn't know that, and I guess I'm angry now that I do.
Yeah, it's not going to make you happier. I'm just telling you that's clearly what it's a reference to. But
okay, so an actress from the 30s, a woman, is also a pun on the name of the dirty homeless guy with shoes.
Is it all making sense now?
It does.
It's all coming together.
This is why we've got to have this back and forth, because
it's congealing like a wax in a pouch.
We get yet another flashback. I wish I'd kept track. This is probably 7. LaDonna's convincing Creamy to go over the wall with her of Modeland to go see her baby. And as we all know, the one girl who did that aged 50 years in the blink of an eye. But she promises, like, hey, my mom's the Belladonna. It'll be cool. Once we get back, I'll just say I'll get her to fix it for her. They scale the wall, jump into the divide. They took 2 steps and snap. Their skins dried and wrinkled. Their hair sprouted tufts of gray. Cremolata's cheeks shriveled like a raisin. She looked much more like the creamy Tookie knew. And she says she feels her puckered face and screamed, LaDonna, do your royal thing. Makes us young again. But LaDonna continued through the brush. I got you. Don't worry. Let's just get through the divide first. So this is sort of the origin of this, of her wrinkled face.
Okay. And so then obviously LaDonna goes back and is restored and stuffed into a statue.
Yeah, of course. Oh, obviously. Yes.
Yeah, okay.
They show up on Ray Fay's doorstep and he does the thing where he says, like, you know, she's like, don't look at me, I'm hideous. And he says, I love you no matter what you look like. And then he slams the door in Creamy's face because he obviously hates her because he knows that she's not the loyal friend she pretends to be. And then in the middle of the night, LaDonna wakes up to go get baby formula for their baby. And that's when Creamy sneaks in. She leaves the door unlocked. And she then, it says, she disguises her voice to lure him to the kitchen.
Wow, this is like Shakespeare then.
Oh, yeah.
You can just do that. Just put on a little mask and like, oh, okay.
Exactly. Yeah. It doesn't even act like, since they were, you know, since they were both wrinkled so badly, he couldn't tell it was her. He just gets down. He's like, you, what are you doing here? And then she essentially like climbs on top of him and is like, I saw you looking at my body at the fashion show. You know you want this.
Wow.
And he says, get off me, you nasty ass sick girl. Ray screamed. He struggled to escape from Cremolata's gasp. But, you know, okay, this grown man, he's a cobbler. He probably works with his hands. How will she possibly pin him down? What do you think?
superhuman strength. From
But Crumbolato was surprisingly strong. So there you go.
Yeah, okay.
So the 50 years thing doesn't, you know, degrade your muscles. It doesn't do anything. It just makes you, you know, look, I guess, you know, 50 years older.
Sure. That's, you know, very, very Twilight Zone, right?
Sure. Yep.
Suddenly, yeah, your face is just aged. Okay.
He wriggled out, but she kneed him in the groin. He howled in pain. The baby starts crying, and she says, "Tell me you love me. Please, please, please," she murmured, the sagging skin on her face looking jaundiced under the harsh kitchen lamp. "Tell me I'm more beautiful than LaDonna." I'm not sure what she needs to have proved there, but Belladonna comes back. The standard misunderstanding bullshit happens where she's like, "Frey, how could you? My best friend." You know, you've seen the movies countless times.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Modelland guards come back. They break down his door and drag the two girls back to the Belladonna. They say, normally you'd be, you know, kicked out, obviously, but you're the Queen Belladonna's daughter. They drag him back too, for just because it serves drama better if he's there, so that he can do the just let me explain, and then she'd be like, "Shut up, I hate you."
Okay. Wow, they have the power to drag just a civilian. They can just.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the fact that he like came violated their laws, and now they have jurisdiction over him or something like that.
Oh, okay. He was extradited to Marvel Land.
Yes, exactly. Okay. They've got a treaty worked out with the rest of the world.
Okay.
And they say she can either. That LaDonna can either go live with Rey and her baby or stay at Model Land and have her looks back. So she, you know, of course we know she gives up the baby, but she also says, "I don't want this guy to raise it."
Wow.
So she's a, you know, just a cold hearted, you know, awful person.
And what did Wingtip do? Like, what is his. To her, why doesn't she want him to raise?
Well, because she walked in as Creamy was, like, you know, trying to, like, you know, grind up on him. And
she still believes. Okay. All right. Gotcha.
Yeah.
All right.
Even though it was easily explained away. And
yes.
But Creamy says, she goes, "What about me?" Cremolata piped up. The Queen Belladonna gave her a cold, dark gaze. "What about you? Go away and never come back here again. You're an awful influence on my daughters." Creamy blinked so hard her eyes disappeared into a bevy of wrinkles. "But what about my youth? LaDonna, you'd promised you'd restore everything. That's why I agreed to go down the mountain with you." "It's true," LaDonna said. She looked at her mother. "Please, can you return her to..." "No," the Belladonna decreed. "And that's final." Security grabbed Cremolata. Cremolata glowered at LaDonna. "You lying, selfish royal bitch! You promised!" Then her face turned eerily calm. "Well, in that case, guess what, princess? Rey didn't wrong me. You wronged him. I jumped him. I have no idea how he could resist me, but he did. He was fighting me off the whole time." So now that she's revealed her evil, like, you know, of course you'd hopefully have some time to go back. But the Queen Belladonna says, "No, you should have had better judgment with your friends." no backseas on giving away your baby and ruining your father's life.
Wow.
Yeah.
So no, the Belladonna's no wisdom. No, there's no Solomon here. Like.
Yeah.
Now I see the situation. Here is how we shall resolve it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's, you know, it's, you made a mistake and you will pay for that. And, you know, not only will it affect your life, but the lives of an innocent civilian and a baby.
So does she order her to go out and, like, look, find anyone, find a clown, and I don't know, an acrobat, just find someone to raise this kid? Is that what happened?
All right, we'll keep going.
All right, okay.
She says she should have better judgment choosing her friends, and says, "It seems the loyal one was this one you overlooked." So this has been a long-ass chapter. This has been probably, like, you know, a third of this entire section. It's, you know, 30 pages. But yeah, seems the loyal one was the one you overlooked. And so Tuki, her drool string is pretty much at the floor by this point. Tuki looked at the mannequin, suddenly recognizing her.
Oh, my God.
LaDonna let out a gasp, too. The mannequin was a transformed Persimmon.
Wow, she is dumber than a box of rocks,
it's amazing,
huh?
Yep. Yeah. The surface of her once soft skin was now hard in plastic. Dark creases lined every joint of her body. Her energetic, bright blue eyes had been replaced with black voids. She's just getting it now.
Wow.
And then present-day Creamy shouts to the older mannequin, to the mannequin Persimmon, "Lord have mercy, Percy, that queen bitch sure did curse thee." So, you know, she's just seen, like, you know, relived her worst moments as a human, but she's having a pretty good time up here.
That's what she does in like one of the worst moments of her. Do people do that when they're like, you know, having trauma therapy or something?
Right. Yeah.
During the middle of it, like they're weeping, like
crying out.
I saw my family killed. Oh my God. Hang on. Let me make a stupid pun.
Yeah. Right, a playground rhyming snap at you. Yeah. And this is something like, I guess the aging 50 years gave LaDonna cataracts. So it does affect some part of your physical abilities. Not Creamy's surprising strength, obviously, but
surprisingly strong.
But they say, like, hey, like, you know, as to remember this, I'm going to give you your bad eyesight's going to persist. So wow. I guess the Belladonna still has that. And then to cap it all off, she asked to hold her baby one more time, and the Queen Belladonna says no.
Wow. All right.
Yeah. So everyone is just a terrible person. Persimmon, I guess, was nice. And so the chapter ends with LaDonna sank to her knees as Percy vanished down the long hallway with her child in my arms. Give her back to me. Give me my ... Eh?
Baby?
No. It's a proper noun.
Give me back my, I can't think of the proper noun.
Seal! So we've had two different parentage reveals in 30 pages or so. That's sort of what they're stacking up at. It's like Lost when it was like, now Sawyer's sister is the Australian chick, huh? And you're like, I don't care.
So why the misdirections on both things?
Misdirections, you know, maybe they'd be annoying in a sort of serialized television show where you're like, wait till next week when you'll find out who the baby is. But it's very annoying when you just turned a page and it was like, you know, it was the acrobat. It wasn't the acrobat. It's like that tech war thing we talked about last week.
Yeah. Oh, that is wretched storytelling.
Okay. Yes.
Especially since the, you know, the core of the story, we're supposed to be just on like Tookie getting through the school. Like in, essentially, as we've said, it's like a road movie. Then you do this. Then you do this. You know, then come on.
Here
man.
Comes the
this
final the challenge, the final Quidditch game. Yeah, exactly. No, it's going to be
then
like,
you stuff in a big thing about, you know, parentage, you know, patronage and all of this. Like, what? I don't care. I don't. Exactly.
But so we still have some questions remaining, though. Like, what does CL mean? Which will get revealed soon. But CL has some questions, and as we've discussed before, this has not been a reliable narrative in the next chapter, 44, Wicked Couture. But I have green eyes. That baby in the flashback had gray eyes, CL said dazedly. Huh? So what do you think happened?
Well, going back to the wedding, there was a child at the wedding with very, very blue eyes. And I said, because I knew the other children, I said, do you think that she will keep her blue eyes? And the mother said, no, eyes change all that. I don't know.
Your eyes turn green later, the Belladonna said in a monotone. A common occurrence with babies born with blue or gray eyes.
Thank you.
Why did you bring that up? Why was that even? Not a single person was thinking they'd be like, the baby had green eyes, however. Is there more treachery afoot?
Wait, when I see pictures of you when you were young, your hair was a different color. Like, come on, this is a common thing.
Creamy and LaDonna are still trading insults. They say, like, your heart is black inside. How did you convince someone to spend the rest of his life with you with that nasty-ass face of yours? So just, you know, we're wondering, how is Mr. De La Creme at this point in time?
Yes, please. And also, what... There's the face ages, mm-hmm. but she's incredibly strong.
Right.
I mean, she has remarkable strength. So everything else, she has the mind of a younger person.
Yeah, and it's also, you know, probably been 20 years from then. You know, they've left. She has a 15-year-old daughter, like, et cetera.
Sure, so I don't know then what does the face aging do, but there was a lot about how mostly her face was hideous.
Right, and she spent 4 or 5 months... you know, crawling through, you know, a war zone and eating grubs and stuff. So, I mean,
I'm talking about in the past, like, during the courting with, with Chris Krem.
No, with Wingtip.
With Wingtip.
Yeah.
Wait.
Wingtip.
How does she end?
Wingtip is Seal's dad. We have not seen, unless it was like in chapter three or something, when, you know, when the acrobat, they had that scene of him getting blinded by her mirror. Maybe she ran down to comfort him after that or something.
Okay. But, well, yeah, we all right. I'm caring less with every explanation.
So then they start shoving each other. The Belladonna steals Bellissima, her doll that she carries around everywhere.
Sure.
And then there's a shriek and droplets land on Tookie's face. Creamy and the Belladonna huddle together for a moment as though locked in an intimate embrace. But then Tookie saw a sharp, shiny metal object piercing her mother's gut and protruding clear through her back. The two women were skewered together with a spike from the Belladonna's dress.
What?
And so, by the way, her dress had spikes on it, which unfair not to mention this, but it's how I read the book too. Because I read that and I was like, what the hell? And I went back and like, it said this, it said, when they caught her on out of the statue, the shape-shifting dress finally settled into a dramatic black floor-length gown with sharp spikes twisted around the high-necked collar. Every so often, the spikes writhed and twisted alive. But it was like, you know, another paragraph about the dress turned into this, then it turned into this. So, of course, any reader tunes that out and is like, I don't care what the dress is.
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was 30 pages
ago. You expect to get something out of one of Tolkien's songs in the middle of the...
Exactly.
The swamp or something. Like, no, I wasn't supposed to listen to that, was I?
A perfect comparison. So
that is wretched.
So she's impaled like that, you know, like on one of Wolverine's spikes. And then I thought this might be an opportunity if we wanted to do a little role reversal here and see if that little girl wanted another bedtime story.
Yeah, of course she does. Okay. Oh, you know what? She is here. That's true.
Oh,
she
great.
Here.
That's good. Hey, yeah. I just thought that you might be interested in just a little trip to the land of make-believe as you nod off to sleep.
I always am, especially from you, Uncle Connor.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Your dad couldn't be here, but Uncle...
I hear that you have a macerating toilet. I was very excited by that.
I do. When you put the waste into it, the sharp jaws of the macerator slice it up. And then
that sounds really cool.
Then they shove it into a pipe, and that's how the...
I don't know why I'm interested.
It's weird. But it's nice. I mean, as in my capacity as an uncle, I feel like it's my duty to teach you things. And toilets that expel feces upwards of 16 feet through a basement is one of those things.
Feces? What is that?
No,
is
well,
that
let's. Like my poop-poop? It'll come up in the book, actually. So.
Okay. Oh well, let's get to the book.
Tookie wiped the moisture that had splashed her face, then looked at her hand. It was smeared with red. Blood.
Oh. What?
Yeah.
I just thought it was strawberry sauce.
No, it's not strawberry sauce. It's her mother's blood.
Oh,
blood
no.
Gushed from Creamy's wound.
No. No.
Creamy writhed desperately to free herself from the Belladonna's spike.
She's okay, right?
Well, she's writhing. That's usually not something okay people do.
Oh, writhing is bad. That's right.
It's usually bad. Today. You don't writhe in, you know, I guess you could writhe in ecstasy, but it's in agony. Once she did, she spun around and staggered a few steps forward.
She's okay?
Well, it's sort of like that scarecrow dance that your father predicted earlier in this podcast episode. Her eyes rolled back. Is that something that usually happens to people who are okay?
There's so much eye rolling in this book. Sometimes their pupils disappear.
And sometimes it's in hollow shells that are caked with crud.
Oh, that was almost seems like a green forest compared to this.
Reddish froth spilled from her mouth.
Oh, God,
blood trickled out of her nose.
No.
And after a moment, she crumpled to the ground in a heap.
It's getting late. We should probably stop.
No. Can you imagine that? Can you imagine that happening to your own mom? What's her deal? We don't hear much about her.
I don't want to talk about it.
Oh my God, Mommy! Cookie Crook tore across the floor, slid on the spilled blood, and dropped to her knees. Oh, my mommy! She whispered, cradling the woman's head in her hands. Creamy's Creamy's eyes fluttered open and locked with her daughter's. What did you just call me, Mom? I mean, Creamy. Tookie corrected herself. Creamy nodded faintly. Her face.
I should have paid more attention to this book because I'm slightly confused.
Yeah, her mom prefers that she call her by her. Does not want to have her call her mom. She loathes her daughter, who is born of her own flesh, so much that she refuses to let her call her mother or mom or mommy. She wants to be called by her first name, which is Cremalotta.
So her mommy's not her mommy?
Well, her mom wishes she weren't her mommy. Her mom wishes she had never given birth to her.
Should my mommy die in a pool of blood?
It's
I don't
possible.
Understand.
Did your mom give birth to you in a toilet like this? Like Seal was.
I was told I was born in a dirty truck stop urinal.
Oh well, there you go. That's your father told me that too. It was, you know, when I held you for the first time at the hospital, he said this girl was born in a dirty truck stop urinal.
I thought that was a good thing. Turns out it's not.
It seems. I mean, I guess if he said it like I said it, dirty truck stop urinal.
Yeah, he did. He said it now that I recall. Yeah, it just doesn't, I was very young.
Right. It takes a while to pick those things up. Maybe you hit your head on the lip of the urinal as you were born. Weird that the woman was giving birth in a urinal and there were urinals in the women's room at the truck stop. But I guess maybe he brought her into the men's room. It's weird.
I'm too young to understand these things.
Well, you should understand that women's bathrooms are, you know, tradition. It's a stereotype that they're nicer than men's rooms. So the fact that your father brought your mom into the men's room, the filthier room, I think shows a lot about what he thinks
I'll
of you.
I'll learn that bathroom stuff in the third grade.
Sure, okay, that makes sense. Creamy nodded faintly, her face now ashen. Blood pulsed from her abdomen in time with the beat of her heart. Tookie could see her slipping away with each passing second. Creamy swallowed, as if mustering up the strength to utter her last words. Then, through cracked lips, she spoke. Tookie, get me... my bellissima. End of chapter. So
she loves her doll more than she loves her daughter.
She does. She loves her dirty, dead-eyed doll more than her own truck stop urinal daughter.
I don't usually do this, but I'm going to ask you to leave my room. I don't feel like this is appropriate.
That makes sense. I am actually on parole and has probably violated it. So good night, dear. Your father may or may not love you, but I'm on the fence too. End
wow.
of chapter.
Right, I'm gonna send her out of the room. That's a good wow.
idea. That poor girl. Well, maybe we'll check in with her later. And after that delightful little whatever that was, we'll move into chapter 45, which is called La Camara Bruta, the Ugly Room.
Wow, I did not. Is that French?
Maybe Italian. I don't know. I'm not sure. I it's not spelled out that that's what it is, but I picked up on that after reading it.
Okay.
I think this is, we may have seen it before. That's where Seal was like beating herself and stuff, I think. But first we check in with the crowd in the stadium. It says the acrobats had wandered off and the jungle cats had been stuffed back into their cages because they'd become too restless and violent to be loose.
what exactly is happening on the circus floor?
I mean, it's essentially a stadium, and I don't know what the cats were going to be doing in general, but I also don't know what the too violent meant, but hopefully it was something funny.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Gladiator, right?
Yeah, right.
The tiger, and yeah.
So we are, at this point, I think three chapters left. We're 527 pages into this book, and I'm not going to say it's going to be completely redeemed, but the book is about to be partially redeemed.
What?
Any guesses?
That is a bold statement.
Yeah. In the eyes of our listeners, I would say. Any idea what we're going to get?
In the eyes of our listener be redeemed. Oh, yes. O'Neill takes a big role.
Not that good, but you'll see. This is the sort of thing I told Lauren it happened, and she was like, how? How can this be possible? Gunnero Nars, three-quarter man, one-quarter woman, and sort of the Snape figure of the book in that he's always...
He's the one that narrated the pod racing, right? The
He narrated the man attack.
Yes, okay.
Making the sexual remarks about the preteens.
Sure.
So he bolts in, he eyes the grisly scene, the dirty, bloodied woman on the floor, the pool of blood around her getting larger by the second, the bloodied spikes on the Belladonna's gown. What in knockoff handbag hell have you done? He whispered to the Belladonna and pressed his long, slender fingers to his mouth.
Wow. All right. Yeah. A little golf clap for that then.
I told Lauren it has happened in 75% of the books we've read. And she was like, how is that possible? Why is that a thing?
If we were reading good literature, do you think it would be? I mean, is it just, the effect of Bader-Meinhof?
I mean...
The effect of now that we see it, we can't stop seeing it?
Possibly, but like... But it's just such a strange thing. You never think about it it never comes up in the movies we do. And like, you know, it just... I don't know why that's a go-to description for people's...
It's very odd. We had that. We have the, there's a lot of the lip biting.
Uh-huh.
Biting top lips, doing that. Blinking, a lot of eye stuff.
Mm-hmm.
This is very odd. Is this like, is there a school of crappy writers? Or
right, yeah. Like how all the announcers for sports come from Syracuse, so that's why they all sort of sound generically the same. Like,
yeah, right. Yeah. Or you know, where in acting school, they used to tell you to adopt the mid-Atlantic accent. So Katharine Hepburn and all of them were talking like this.
Yeah,
you know?
Sure. That's, but yeah, I can't imagine that... Tyra Banks and Charles E. Harris are taking the same correspondence courses and how to write crappy books.
Right.
And so he's like, what happened here? And essentially Persimmon throws them all under the bus. She's like, I don't know whether it was an accident or not. And then a pang of guilt shoots through Tookie. The Belladonna had chosen Tookie to come to Maudland after all, but Tookie knew it hadn't been for the right reasons. She knew that danger still lurked somewhere. She just wasn't sure where. Or in what form? And honestly, Tookie couldn't tell if the Belladonna had meant to stab her mother or not. So just as we near the end, it's great that she's really clearing things up here.
It's just like in Ready Player Two in Prince World, right?
Yep.
Wasn't there something like, and then
yeah,
who knows?
Right, yeah.
This was either good or bad or something happened and right. All of a sudden here we are.
Now we're heading into Proxima Centauri with a spaceship full of embryos. So the end. Thanks for the money. They drag Creamy and Bella out of the room by their like stiletto heels or whatever. I guess Creamy probably wasn't wearing those, but Bella was. Gennaro Nars gets on the horn and announces to everyone in the stadium, the 7-7 tournament is ... postponed.
Oh.
The crowd gasped, and then he adds, indefinitely. The upper-class Bellas all screamed. So the idea of it being postponed indefinitely was what really set them off.
Wow. There's a word for postponed indefinitely, by the way.
Right.
It's called canceled.
Right, yeah. Well, he had to set them up for a gasp and then a scream.
I guess if you're going to use two ellipses, I guess you're going to need that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's sort of like a rain delay at a baseball game. You'd be like, hey, we're in a rain delay. Or, you know, we're not sure when we're going to make it up, as opposed to being like, we're never going to play this game again, I guess.
Yeah. I hope that flight attendants also do that, or desk, you know, people at the announcing to the gate.
Right.
Well, we've got some bad news. The flight is delayed, ... forever.
You do get those responses, though, in those in flight delays like that. You get collective groans. You rarely have them in society as a whole.
Yes.
It's
true.
Then we get a narrator recap. We get the darling lady kicking in, speaking to Katharine Hepburn, to just inform us how this postponement plays out in the world as a whole.
Sure.
And so you remember on the Day of Discovery when everyone was sort of walking or dancing and people were getting trampled and falling into manholes and people were having compound fractures and dying. And we were like, why do they have this event? Just cancel it.
Yeah,
well,
sure.
It turns out that not having the event is much, much worse.
Oh, dear.
It says the
riots.
Oh, yeah. Riots. The immediate effects of the decree were tragic. Hospitals from Terra Bossa Nova to Tulip were flooded with victims who'd fainted from the hideous blow. Others hurled themselves off tall buildings in Ladurno, their bodies crashing to the street in front of tourists and children. So maybe that little girl was like, I got to go for a walk, clear my head, and then bodies crashed down to the street in front of her.
Wow, it's the happening.
That's exactly what I wrote.
Yeah.
So factories shut down, workers start looting, there's graffiti and vandalism, fires start getting lit, rioters rushed the Sapphire Esplanade and Ladurno, grabbing perfume bottles and hurling them at one another like missiles. Vicious fights erupted in the mall corridor. People tore at one another's clothes, gouged out eyeballs, and drowned one another in the fountains.
No.
I mean, like... You know, they canceled the Oscars last year and people were pretty okay with it.
Wow.
And like, were all the, you know, if the one major event of this world is a fashion show, where all the men here sort of being like, oh no, that got canceled. Oh, I guess I'm so upset. I guess we can't watch the fashion show. I'm going to have to, you know, go and putter around and mow the lawn. Ah, what a shame.
Right. Dancing with the Stars is canceled?
Right.
I mean, right? It's about the same level.
The Tonys, something like that. Like an annual thing that, like, you know, it would be impossible for a vast majority of people to care about.
Wow. Okay. Well, it's like, you know, most of the the famous things, like the stock market crash, like people tossing themselves out of windows, mm-hmm. is a myth, as is the broadcast of Orson Welles' War of the Worlds.
Oh, okay. Or that everyone flushes their toilet at the same time during the Super Bowl. And that
right. Largely a myth. I don't think that anyone took to the streets.
That's good. That speaks well of humanity about the Orson yeah. Welles thing. Like the train coming at people and then thinking it's real, I think is also a myth.
Yeah, it is also a myth as well.
I mean, you know, you got to understand. People in general are dumb, but I guess they're just not that dumb. Or a different kind of dumb.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, there's plenty of real world examples. That's why when they you know, do work, you know, you're not surprised, but some things just aren't true. Right. So.
Well, and then the narrator says, why all the bedlam, you know, you ask? Well, the only certain thing in the world, the only thing on which many people could depend, their single source of happiness and hope had been postponed, ... indefinitely. So definitely is really doing a lot of work here.
Wow.
And then it says, think about how you feel, darling. So it's like, yeah, how would that make you feel?
Well, if I lived in, what's the good place? The place that's like, if we're doing Game of Thrones, is like the Italian sure. villa, you
and
know,
Ladorno,
like Pompeii.
Right? That's...
Ladorno, right?
Yeah.
So if you lived in Ladorno and it was canceled, you'd be like, well, guess I'll go out to my infinity pool and have a martini. Okay. Oh, I'm supposed to go into this town and claw out someone's eyeballs? Yeah,
throw a perfume right. bottle at a grandma or something.
Yeah, it was like, you know, I endured the, I was old enough to, when Y2K was coming around, where I had to fret about it for a long time. I'm like, what's going to happen if the power does go out? I'm going to go to my neighbor Phyllis and like stab her in the throat and take her beans? Right, like yeah. what?
I guess.
I'm not worried about this.
I could go buy the beans, but hey, I mean, that's not, you know, yes. not doing my part. But then, well, she clarifies though. So your reaction was a little cavalier because this is how she describes it. Think about if someone suffocated you, strangled you, cut off your nose, held you underwater, for that is how the globe's population felt. So I just am going to say that
what?
I think they have their priorities tremendously out of whack. Like, or that the door is open for someone else to come up with another event. You know, people are like, well, if this one was so important, maybe we should have like done more than one of these.
Wow. Good. Wait, cut off your nose, put a bag over your head?
Held you underwater.
Held you underwater. Okay.
So it's just a massive panic attack to the point where it feels actual physical pain. Guru Ganero's announcement had cut off the world's oxygen supply, and they were desperately gulping for air. And I had to issue a firm settle down for the fashion show having this effect on people.
Yeah, Tyra, I hate when people say you live in a bubble, but I think you live in a bubble if you think that you think that fashion means nearly that much
right.
as having my nose cut off and held underwater.
Right. This is
like a North Korean prison.
This is like when people, week two of the pandemic, Will Ferrell and Kristen Wiig decided they needed to record themselves singing Imagine. This is sort of what Tyra thinks her book is having or her fashion show is having. So Persimmon takes Tookie and Seal to the ugly room, which is described thusly, red and pulsing like they were inside a giant organ. There was a bloodthirsty feeling in the air, as well as the unpleasant odor of human waste. They get a little further in. They were greeted with a new smell, the stench of rotting flesh, which grew stronger with every step. So waste or rotting flesh, which one you got if you're confined in a room for 24 hours?
Well, I mean, this book has gone a lot to, we have toilets and urinals, we have defecate, we have rotting flesh.
Imagine sentence if you at the beginning of Model Land, we played that back for you. Like, here's you in the future talking about the book Model Land. We have toilets, waste, toilet babies, defecate.
Oh, dear. Wow. Okay. So what happens in the organ room?
So what did you pick?
Oh, wait, what?
What was your preference if you were in a room for 24 hours and one of those odors was just wafting in?
Oh, do I have to choose like it's a menu?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, let me look over the menu here. How is your rotting flesh, like how rotted? Would you say if I looked at it, would it still be kind of purplish rotting or is it fully to black?
Sir, it is quite ripe. There are maggots have devoured the flesh around the skull, so there are still maggots in the eye sockets, but they are moving on to the hindquarters now.
As my waiter, I feel it's okay to ask you this question as well, because once my brother worked at a a small grocery store that did not adhere to hygiene standards, and they had a barrel of meat scraps.
Oh, yes, sir. We do and he, source he walked, many of our meat from there.
Sure. And he walked me over to the barrel, which had a like a sealed lid on it, but that, for whatever reason, does not keep maggots out. And I was 15 feet away from the barrel, and I heard a sound, a squishing, mushy, you know, a sound you don't want to hear.
Very good, sir, yes.
Yeah, and he opened up the barrel lid, and a frothing white mass of maggots was going as they consumed the rotted flesh. So that's my memory of that. Is that what that's like?
That is our special tonight, sir, yes.
Okay. Oh, that sounds delicious. Now, the what is it, fecal matter or?
It just says unpleasant odor of human waste, sir.
Human waste. So
I can,
both.
I can
so
inquire
both.
In the kitchen if you.
Okay. But no, well, no, that's not necessary.
I can assure smell. You it is a mix of one and two.
I gotcha. Okay, because, you know, normally sometimes you'll go to someone's cabin and they'll have that sign that says, you know, if it's yellow, let it mellow.
Yes, sir.
If it's brown, flush it down.
We have yellow that has been mellowing for approximately 48 days in the back room.
Oh, okay. See, I never feel like it. I feel like it never mellows. I feel like it does not mellow at all. And I can't imagine that feces does. You know what? I'm going to go with the rotting flesh.
Rotting flesh. Excellent choice, sir.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you very much.
We passed by two days ago, took a bike ride and smelled something rotting on the side of the bike path, a deer or a raccoon, something.
Sure.
It's pretty bad. And I guess you're just less used to it. So I'd probably have to go with the waste.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I assume we've all had a dead mouse or something in the wall.
It's pretty bad.
It's just like, come on, man.
Anyway, they see Belladonna, who I think we had this in fanfic. She's dressed in a gray, ugly room jumpsuit. Her body faced a wall of mirrors, which reflected not the lovely woman they had just seen in the flesh for the first time, but a pockmarked, scaly-skinned beast. She had entrails for hair, a twisted tree root for a nose, and millipedes for eyelashes. She writhed in pain at her hideous reflection, but couldn't turn away because a restraint around her head forced her to face forward. Her wrists and ankles were bound to the chair, which was bolted to the floor. Metal clamps held her eyes open, making blinking impossible. A saline stream dripped into her eyes from a clear bag above. What do you think? Predict Tookie's reaction.
Well, she doesn't look good. I mean, I don't know. Understated.
Yeah.
What's going on with her?
Oh, Tookie gasped. Oh, with only three H's in it. It's not even real.
Oh.
Do you think when they were like buying the saline bags and the mounting things to put into someone's eyes if they ever needed to use the eye dripping machine, they're like, what are we doing here at Model Land? Like,
and also, you know, so they're at the store and, you know, the music is playing lightly in the background and they're pushing their cart up. Oh, you got these things that clamp people's eyes open. Yes. And you got some. You're from Model Land, aren't you? I would claw my eyeballs out if you guys ever canceled that tournament.
Yeah.
Let me get these intestine wetters here for your hair,
right.
And then I'll check you out.
Yeah, you're going to want to check in down the street at Phil's. They're doing a special on millipedes. Phil's bait and tackle. And then next to her is Creamy, also dressed in an ugly room jumpsuit, lay on a cot, her filthy feet splayed out, her dingy, wrinkled skin looking even more puckered and damaged than usual. Her soot-caked eyes were shut tight, tubes protruded from her veins, wires stretched from her nose, a bag was attached to her gut, draining blood.
Stop.
So they got some pretty good medics there. And then Tookie...
Holy moly.
Tookie says, studied her carefully and says, my mom doesn't look that much different from when she was in the flashback room. I guess the ugly room figured she was already dirty and ugly enough, CL said. So I guess the ugly shows your true self, I guess. So that's the final burn you can get in on the mom there.
Wow. All right, I'm still trying to figure out the seal relationship to the other people, but I don't know. I'll get it. It'll click someday.
Sure. CL is the Belladonna's daughter. So these two are both in there with her, with their moms, like in these horrible scenarios.
Okay. And CL was raised by...
CL was raised, well...
By Wingtip.
No, because the Belladonna... When the original Belladonna thought that her husband, Faye Ray, a.k.a. Ray Faye, a.k.a. Wingtip, had cheated on her with Cremelotta Defecake. She said, I don't want my baby because I want my youth back. However, I also don't want this jerk to raise it because he tried to cheat on me with Cremelotta Defecake.
Okay. So who raised Seal?
That, I think she was like a ward of Model Land.
Oh, okay.
I think.
Gotcha. All right.
And then so we get this exchange. Tookie touched her mother's foot. It was ice cold. Creamy, she struggled to get the words out. I love you. All I've ever wanted is for you to love me back. Creamy didn't answer. All Tookie heard was the sucking sound of her mother's blood in tubes.
All right.
So I think this is the last we see of Creamy. I do not think she dies. I think she's just left in the ugly room. To possibly recover, maybe not. But they both are doing this thing to their moms, like, I always loved, I just wanted you to love me, that type of garbage. And then we get this stunner, because CL's doing that to the Belladonna. And the Belladonna is able to talk, because she's not, you know, intubated with all this stuff happening. She says, you are my whole world, CL. More than Model Land, more than anything. The Belladonna erupted into violent sobs. When I had you, I looked into your gray eyes, and the first thing I said was, I see love. And CL, every time I see you, even right now, I see love. That's how I named you. CL. See love.
You can't see it, but both my middle fingers are up right now.
So this is the giant reveal of all reveals. No explanation of where the tilde comes into there.
Yeah. What?
So all along, I guess you're supposed to be saying CL, but it's Psy-L, so it's CL. We got 25 pages left at this point in time. You can't be expecting us to do anything other than give the double middle fingers and flip the page, really.
I mean, is this something that she does normally, like make up? Because it must be incredibly annoying to her friends. You know how the Beatles always had there's the little secret things. That's a very British thing. They would say, tables and chairs are apples and pears.
Sure, Cockney slang.
Let's bring out the apples and pears.
Ugh.
And then it's like the A and P. And you're supposed to say, like, grab the A and P.
God.
And, you know, that would be annoying.
I'm very annoyed already, yeah.
Yeah, so what is her thing with this is, like, because she wrote it hard. And has it ever paid off in a way that makes you go like, oh, I'm happy that her name is Seal. Is anyone happy about this? That's what my point is.
No, it's, I mean, the reveals that you wanted. I mean, there were actual mysteries in the book. Who is Tookie's dad was established as a major mystery in the first 40 pages. We've had multiple parents reveal who their parents are, who their kids are. That's not one of them. And yet we're still like, but what was the meaning behind Seal's name? It's like, it's Model Land. We've had all sorts of idiotic garbage thrown at us. This was just assumed to be one of them.
Yeah, we have a guy named
Gennaro
Nars.
Yeah.
We're past the point of caring about what are the origins of this stupid name.
Yeah, why was Jabba the Hutt named that? Because everyone has an idiot. We have a guy named Kit Fisto. What are you talking about?
Well, I guess it is reminiscent of the, speaking of Game of Thrones, right?
Oh, yep. Hodor.
What was Hodo?
That's just as dumb, because that was in a flashback, too, that was revealed.
Oh, didn't that blow up the internet with people go like, I wept when I heard that the origin of Hodor's name. These are the people who would love the Seal reveal.
I suppose so. That's a very apt analogy. It's almost exact. And this probably came out first. So,
right.
Anyway, so speaking of Gennaro Nars, he comes in and says, Body Girl, that's Seal's nickname, as you might recall, maybe probably not. You must pay for who you are and what the hell you have become. So that ends that chapter. We go to chapter 46 with perfect execution. There are 25 pages left at this point.
Okay.
So they this is where he's dragging her outside by her 7-inch stiletto heels, and I guess Tookie and her were the only ones let into the ugly room. Everyone else has just sort of faded into the background, like Hal on, you know, on The Simpsons when you need Chief Wiggum to yell something from the crowd, he's always there, type of thing.
Sure.
Those girls are not needed anymore, but they go outside, and there's a bunch of students out there who are, you know, pissed off that the event has not been happening, including Zen Zen, who has, you know, played a really big role. Glad we spent so much time with her.
Yeah, she's like their guide.
He was their guide, and she idolized Seal, but it doesn't matter. She's just here now to sort of, in theory, wrap up her story, but it doesn't really. Anyway, I just wanted to point that out because there's all the other characters, like the headband girl. She's there. She like doesn't really know what's going on because of her headbanger or whatever. But
Oh, yeah. And by the way, one of the through lines was that they thought they were going to get sacrificed. So is that what this is?
They thought they were going to. So, no, he's dragging Seal off to punish her. The sacrifice, I think that was all just a misunderstanding.
Oh, okay. Well, that's pretty much what animated the first 490 pages of the book. Yes. But, all right. Okay.
So they drag her off. There's horrible screech. Oh, yeah. This is good. Then the girls noticed Seal, whom the guards were dragging by her hair. Horrible screeches emitted from Seal's mouth. I was just amused that that was something they noticed.
From her. Hey, those squeals are coming from her mouth.
Yeah. Or just, you
kind
know.
Of unexpected.
Hey, the secret police are dragging out that shopkeeper who they suspected to be a member of the Resolution. They're going to shoot him behind the store. I just noticed that. Yeah. They go back into the M, which is the faculty building. That's where Tookie had wandered into after she sleepwalked, after the doctor shoved her hairs up her nose to anesthetize her.
Right. And then she woke up and then she heard she walked into the chief,
execution.
The angry chief
situation.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. So then that's all the board, B-O-R-E-D, and gurus are there, and the tic-tac-toe board sort of overseeing this. And we get some very nice climbing in here. Nars dragged CL to a contraption and slammed her head into what looked like a crystal guillotine. And then two lines later, they just dropped that. Two guards marched up to the guillotine.
Okay, so all right, resolved.
Yes.
It is a guillotine.
The mystery has been, he's had a little bit more time, the narrator has to observe it, and now just a guillotine. The diamond blade glimmered in the light, blinding Tookie, just like her mother's mirror had blinded Chris Kremkabat on the tightrope many years before. I misspoke. This is actually the last mention of her father.
Those are the only two versions of light glimmering off something?
Sure. Yeah.
Okay.
She squinted for a moment, watching the blurry guillotine rushing towards CL's neck. Just as the blade reached it, red liquid gushed from CL's neck, covering her body.
Oh, my God.
And then an object appeared on CL's head, a fashionable off-kilter crown. The red liquid transformed into fabric, a stately red damask cape.
What?
All at once, the other board members began to applaud. To the new Belladonna!
What? The guillotine cut her head off and turned into a cape?
I imagine that it like probably like just like disappeared as soon as it hit her thing. Yeah, turning into a fabric crown. The red liquid remains unexplained. Because it turns out that Belladonna is just a straight up line of succession thing. So your remarks there mirror Seals, who scratches her head and says, "Me, the Belladonna? Seriously?"
What?
So I guess since the Belladonna is no longer worthy of this, or is just like locked up, I don't know. The Belladonna is in the ugly room, but and they found out that. I don't know if the Belladonna knew, like, if there was, like, written in the sacred scrolls, like, CL's my daughter, by the way. If I ever die, she's next in line. But, like, I guess no one knew the Belladonna was a hereditary thing.
All right.
Yep.
So is this, like, Sword from the Stone thing? We put you in a crystal guillotine, and if you...
Yeah.
We chop off your head, it's chopped off. But if it transforms into a crown and a red cape, then you are
sure,
the Belladonna.
Yeah, yeah. It's that, tale as old as time.
Holy moly. That is very confusing.
Well, then we get some more drama, though. Slowly, CL descends from her throne and approached Tookie. What are you doing here? What? Did you follow me here? You are not allowed in the M building. I just wanted to help you, Tookie cried. I was afraid you were in trouble. I can take care of myself, C.L. Spat. Psych, Tookie, I was totally kidding.
Oh, God.
So you have either long things that never resolve, or you have drama that immediately just, like, undercuts itself, like, a sentence later.
It is truly, like, morning DJ humor.
Right.
I'm going to give you this beat, throw it in your lap, like, you know, you're, hey, we just got a call. Your father's in the hospital. He was in an accident. He got his head sliced off by a sheet of glass. Just kidding, you idiot. You stupid moron. You believed me?
Right. Yep. That's
get it?
It's a whole book of it. But with a 13-year-old girl. And then so CL tells off Nars. She's like, if you ever mess with Tookie again, like, you know, it's your ass. And then she says, if you have a problem treating Tookie with the respect she deserves, you can kiss my big, fat Princess Belladonna ass.
Is that the one that's been waxed? Has it been waxed?
Well,
that's
as a Belladonna, she probably now has access to the to that facility. Unknown if she's making Gunnarunars do that. She'd probably want to hold off on it to make it more or less unpleasant for him. But
sure.
Unless it's Abigail, and would she probably enjoy it? I don't know.
Yeah, right.
And then she says, Gennaro's staring in shock. And speaking of kissing, I want you, Mr. Nars, to bow down right now to Miss Tookie and kiss her feet. which has got a big target, as we know.
Right. Holy cow. Yeah.
Reluctant.
Even if I kiss anywhere, I'm going to hit the feet. Yeah.
Reluctantly, Gennaro took mincing steps up to Tookie. He fell to his knees, puckered his lips, and kissed Tookie's shoes, which were still soiled with ugly room crud. So crud has had a big moment in this last section.
I'm glad she did hold off on crud for a while, I think.
And Tookie had to admit it felt pretty damn good.
So does this feel earned to you that Tookie gets this, you know, turns the tables? I'm not understanding it.
You know, CL's whole deal, I mean, she let those other three come to school to replace her three dead friends.
Yeah.
But and she was always didn't like Tookie because she didn't know Tookie was there, I guess. But I you know, you'd think that she would be sympathetic to anyone who is not, who is just the exact same as the three people she wanted to admit. But, you know, it happened in Harry Potter all the time. Someone would be a huge dick to Harry, and then he'd be like, the only reason I did that, Harry, was because I loved you so much. Like,
right.
So,
okay.
I mean, if it wasn't earned there, if it was, you know, if it was that predictable, I guess it's just, we know what she's doing here.
All right.
We have one chapter and an outro remaining in the experience that has been Model Land.
Okay. Do we have, should we do a little break of something first? Should we do dumb sentences, or do you want to hold it to the end? You tell me. Let's do it live. We'll do it live.
Let's do it at the end. I mean, it's too bad we don't have real fanfic to break it up, but we'll wrap it up at the end just in case the sentences give anything away.
Okay. Oh, right. Yeah, we can't do that. All right. Let's soldier on.
Tookie walks outside where she has her final encounter with Zarpessa, who she was like, listen, Zarpessa, to reiterate, I have never told anyone about your dumpster diving, even when you were going to the hospital or whatever. And I thought this was some nice dialogue. She says, whatever happened to you is your business, but your harsh reality is still no excuse to be evil, Zarpessa. Which reminded me of like Anakin Skywalker saying, from my point of view, the Jedi are evil. Your harsh reality is still no excuse to be evil. Like, oh, since you put it that way, I never thought about it. I was choosing to be evil.
Also, it's a weird character motivation for an entire arc of a person is that she dumpster dives, even though it was very, very demure dumpster diving, as you recall. Taking warm pieces of you know, sea bass and half-empty bottles of, like, still-chilled wine.
And the world is a hellscape. Like, what, you know?
Yeah, right. So it's not a big deal. But that's a weird character thing. Like, don't you ever tell anybody about that. Like, it's not that big of a deal. It's truly not.
Right. And, you know, it's like, okay. Like, everyone appreciates someone who, I mean, you know, wasn't Oprah famously, like, homeless for a while or something? Everyone appreciates someone who overcomes difficulties in their past to, you know, Zarpessa is like a hot model. So, like, that's, you know, build on that. Like, use it.
Right. That's your story. Like, Jewel lived in her car, right. You know, or there are
JK
there are entire...
was, you know, yeah, you know, had her baby at the coffee shop while she was, you know, stealing sugar packets to subsist on as she wrote those books.
There are entire charities that do the dumpster diving where they just say, instead of throwing your food away, can we have your food? We'll turn it into something. Like, this is not a thing that motivates a character to, like, be the most evil. Anyway, it just doesn't last for 575 pages or whatever.
So we get, as Arpessa says, I guess this is where I say, I don't know. Thank you, she said begrudgingly. Very quickly, we get to her recounting on that, though, because she's like, I'm not going to say thank you. I actually want to know about why you said Theophilus's name during Man Attack. And Tookie's like, I just picked a name out of the blue. I don't actually have a thing for him. This seemed to satisfy Zarpessa, and she placed her hands on her hips. Don't ever think Theophilus would be into you, you unfortunate-looking, big-headed, crazy-eyed, forgettable bitch. Stay away from him and from me, too, because if you ever tell, I'll make your life a living hell, worse than the hell I live in back home. So it's a bit of a whiplash from, I guess this is where I say thank you, she said begrudgingly.
Great character arc.
Yeah, exactly.
How does Zarpessa change?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, she does not change at all.
Right.
Not 100, not one bit over the many, many pages.
And then Tookie slumps down at a bench trying to shake off Zarpessa's hatred. And then she hears the bushes rustle. And this is where we get another thing we saw in fanfic, which is where Webb, Alexander, and O'Neill emerge from the bushes surrounding her. They lift up their shirts where they have Tookie, I'm so sorry, painted on their chests in red paint, goopy red paint. And then they turn.
Wow, that's right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They turn around and on their backs, on their broad back muscles, it says, it was never a bet.
Nice.
Yeah. And then they sort of like retreat to the back because Bravo, a.k.a. Deco, appears. And they pretty much have like the same conversation she just had with Zarpessa. he says, there was never a bet. I only told you I was mad because you were leaving and I thought you used me. So exactly what you predicted in the beginning of this.
Mm-hmm.
And he drops this detail. He says, I wanted to write, Tookie, you're the most amazing girl I've ever laid eyes on. I can't decide which to love more, your green eye or brown eye, but there wasn't enough room on everyone's chest. Believe me, we tried.
Why wasn't that an entire chapter?
Exactly, right. O'Neill being like,
goopy red paint.
You owe me.
Like, all right.
I swear to God, you owe me, man. This is... It was like GoldenEye, where it like, or Goldfinger, where it like it cuts off your skin's ability to breathe.
Right. Yes. So look, you have to turn around to read this sentence. Like, no, it's not. You misspelled it. Go hit the showers. Get that goopy red stuff off.
Yeah, we have stadiums to build, man. We have girders to toss. Like,
yes.
I've got things to hump as O'Neill.
Yes.
Oh well, and I'm going to apologize for this because. He sings her a song that, as you said, you were hoping they'd get better, and I think it might be the worst one in the book.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Sing it.
Oh, Tookie, 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 I love you more than architecture and Loro's oatmeal cookies. Went to the feds because my heart was failing. The purse said, no, Bravo, De La Creme's got your pulse sailing. Oh, Tookie, I never wagered your lip nookie. In your eyes is the only place I want to looky. You've taught me about loving and giving. I was a rookie. You're so pure and sweet. And now I'm hooky on Tookie. So we got lip nookie in there, which is revolting.
It's just stunned silence. it's never good on it.
I wish O'Neill was sort of like playing the harmonica or strumming a guitar in the background to accompany.
Oh, Tookie, I never wagered your lip, Nookie?
That he never bet that he could get her to kiss him as like with, you know, him and O'Neill finding an ugly chick to bet on.
If you were, cast your mind back to before you were married, mm-hmm. if a potential partner said something about lip nookie, would you be like, what would your reaction be?
They would be touching the cloud of smoke that looks like the outline of me, and it sort of dissipates. They'd be like, hello, what? even at your young and horniest, that probably would be a major red flag.
They would see the outline of you crashing through the wall at the brew pub. Like, how did he get through there with his arms kind of spread out yes, to each side? Right,
yeah. Yeah, and especially because, you know, the song Nookie came out during some formative years, so there's some terrible associations with Limp Bizkit and backwards red Yankee hats.
Oh, yeah, that is, wow, that makes it worse. I did not know about that, but holy moly.
My friend bought the red Yankees hat and wore it backwards for a period of time once that came out.
Still a friend?
I'm actually taking a trip with him this weekend. We're going rafting.
Has he reformed?
His IM name on AIM had Nookie in it.
Oh, dear.
I mean, I was going to say, I don't think there's, I probably shouldn't in case he used it as an email or something, but it was big, then his initial Nookie.
Oh, my goodness. All right.
Yeah. Let's see. But I'll tell him he'll be thrilled to know he came up on here. We get one more big reveal. Tookie's real name. Tookalotta. And they essentially just sort of move on. They're like, Tookalotta, but like, you know, we've got to wrap this up, so you just got to... We can't really focus on that too long. I don't know. You know. Sometimes you use your mother or grandmother's like maiden name as a middle name. No idea if it's took a lot of defecake. What's her last name? De La Creme.
Yeah. What does? Did you look it up? Does that mean anything?
I think it's took a joke. Like, it took a lot of gumption to do that thing.
That's it. It's just the sound alike.
Well, like Cremalotta was her mom's name, so it's sort of a tribute to that.
Oh man, that reminds me of my. When my kids were little and they used to ask questions while I was driving them around, and you know, it's like a perfect dad thing to do. They would say, like, Dad, you know, like, who invented the car? And I would go, like, his name was Alexander Witheringham Carr. And they would go, no, I'm really asking.
right. Yeah, just making up a name. What is that was like, is Tookie short for something? I don't know. Tookalotta? Okay, you want me to write that down, or you want to think about it? No, put it down. We're almost done.
Yeah, as a thing to amuse, as to annoy a child, it works. But as a thing in a book, yeah. No.
And then he asks, you know, he's like a gentleman. He's like, you know, I would love to be your first lip nookie. Like, can we kiss? And the book just gets insanely horny.
No,
I didn't write
down. Art.
Yeah, I didn't write down at all because it's just like a lot of like tingling and you know, quivers and stuff. But here's some choice excerpts. Bravo kissed her forehead, then her cheeks, and then her nose. He sucked on her earlobe.
What?
Yeah, it's building up pretty well from like not the first, you know, smooch you do as a, you know, 14-year-old or whatever. He's going full like. Weird, like, guy who calls you his lover type of thing.
Yeah.
And then at the same time, they both lick their thumbs and smooth the other's eyebrows, because that's something they do. And then he says, close your eyes. And Tookie did as she was told. She heard the sound of a whipped cream can shaking and instinctively opened her mouth just in time for Bravo to shoot a cold stream of whip onto her tongue.
All right.
You got to settle with the whip.
Oh, come on.
You got to settle down with the whip abbreviation.
9.5 weeks?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Come on.
The tingles continued down to her hips. She then heard Bravo squirt some cream into his own mouth, and then, slowly, gently, Bravo's soft lips touched hers. His lips parted, and she felt something thick and slimy inside of her mouth. His tongue. So this is her first kiss. And this is, I'm sure I've told the story that my friend who was on Splash Mountain and they smoked a joint and then the ride stopped and he was imagining trying to tell his parents if they got caught doing this, that like, this was the first time I've ever tried weed. Like, it's a hardcore thing to do as your first time ever doing that. Like, I'm going to bring it to Disney World, get on Splash Mountain. And this is for the first kiss. This is going earlobe sucking, dual whipped cream, like swapping. Like, it's an insane, it's crazy.
This is, you know, Marlon Brando, get me some butter kind of stuff.
Yeah.
This is like, what that?
Right.
This is way over the top. May I, I believe you have issued me the license to do it. Can I offer a very firm settle down?
Yeah, absolutely. I think you.
Holy moly.
Yeah. It's, so she then, I mean, to her credit, says she doesn't like kissing that way. where his, you know, tongue is flopping around inside the mountains of whip.
Slimy tongue.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. And she says it's because she never, that never happened when she was practicing with her mirror. And it's like, well, you're an idiot then. Because, like, nothing will feel the same way as this than when it practices with their mirror. But it ends with them smooching with no tongue as she, like, fumbles with her weird flower thing to toss away the Theophilus brooch, the campaign pin. And that's how...
That really played a huge part.
Yep.
Speaking of, how's her... doesn't she have a flower that stores things like a magic bag? Mm-hmm. How's that working out in this story?
It's just, you know, it's good. She's got that. If it ever needs to be used, it'll be there. Okay. And she's got Chekhov's gun inside of it.
Okay.
Then we get an outro. So that's the end of the story.
Wow. All right.
She gets her kiss. They make up. And then the outro starts with some of the way the book started with the darling narrator giving her the, you know, that do you see her bullshit? Like, do you see her? She's like...
That's what we need more of, the darling narrator. Yeah. That's what really...
Yeah, that person that never revealed themselves. They're like, by the way, I'm Wingtip doing this. This is how Wingtip talks. That would have been nice. But she's like, you know, she's the girl whose hair still has multiple personality disorder, but her body is no longer hunched over. And that made me question that... How is Hunchy?
Yeah.
Why was he in the book?
Whose pancreas is he clawing open with his toenails, right?
Yeah. And
razor toes?
Uh-huh. So he's not going to be mentioned again. Not important. No one eats anyone's sweetbreads. She took you sort of like standing on Model Land's like turrets and looking down at the expanse of Metopia's four distinct quadrants surrounding the mountain and prayed that... Lizzie was still down there, still alive. We'll be moving on from her now.
How is Lizzie, your best friend?
Last mention.
You were going to... What was the Exodus, right?
Yes. That was their plan, to go and live on a fountain, build a whipped cream factory and live by the beach.
Yeah, and that was the motivating factor in the book and was completely dropped.
Yep. Nope, Lizzie's...
And then she caused a bus accident after raising a... What looked like, by the way, you mentioned that before, with the metal object, the spike.
Right.
What looked like something shiny and metal. That happened about 25 times in the book. Uh-huh. But yeah, caused the bus accident. That's the end of Lizzie?
It's the end of Lizzie. She's sitting there and hoping she's okay, you know? And she's probably in a padded room if she's lucky. Otherwise, she's, you know, dead. But she hopes she's okay. Prayed she was down there. Prayed to Wingtip or whatever.
Sure. Yeah.
I mean, I'll just burn it now, but this is my dumb sentence. I wrote of the book, and I think someone else wrote in saying of the book, too.
All
of a sudden, something ironic occurred to her. What's your prediction about whether that's going to be an accurate use of the word ironic?
Well, I'm assuming we're talking Alanis Morissette levels of irony here.
I mean,
okay.
Alanis might even be like, what? This is the ironic thing that occurred to her. The adjective form of the word metopia... was metopic, which meant, as she's found out in Dr. Erica's medical dictionary, of or pertaining to the forehead.
What?
I guess she flipped through to the doctor's medical dictionary at some point. And the doctor's the roller skate woman. But that's, there you go. She has a big forehead.
What is the word again?
Metopia is like the universe, I think. That's, you know, that's like Pangea or whatever. The adjective form of it was metopic, which she found out means of or pertaining to the forehead. So I guess she lives in Foreheadville. Yeah.
How does that help anyone?
It doesn't. It just is. That's why it's the dumb sentence of the book, because you're tacking it in with three pages left.
My God. So... I guess that here would be the question. You could write a whole other book about what is the, theology of Model Land. Mm-hmm. And, is it foreheads all the way down? Is that what we're...
Right. Yeah, exactly. It's the, that's what the, when you pan out like in 2001, and the earth that this is just a forehead floating in space.
Okay.
we get this, another loose end tied up. She's tying up a lot of loose ends. They're just not loose ends that you needed to be tied up or cared about. But, you'll recall that, then from a corner of the plaza, Tookie heard a meow followed by a scream. Get away from me, you bitey, scratchy things. Creamy, a ditzy voice whined. Miracle, Tookie thought, perking up. Was her sister still at Model Land, now trapped in Catwalk Corridor? Well, at least she's here, Tookie thought, stifling a giggle. Model Land is where she belongs, after all. So her sister's been turned into a cat and trapped in a horrible dimension of cats. But so she's stifling giggles about that thought.
Oh, okay. So is she going to get sliced open again by her sister and, you know,
get
bleed out?
Get tetanus from all the cats that have it?
Yeah.
We'll save it for book two.
Wow. Holy cats.
So thinking of saving for book two, she meets up with CL, who says, I have no idea if our moms are going to stay in the ugly room or not. It's up to the board.
Oh, so it's, all right. Book two.
Crash that into a poll. Yep. Sure. But she says, the board did take a vote and says, we want to keep you here, even though it was by weird circumstances you ended up here. And then we get this stunner. CL says, but don't be putting your celebration shoes on just yet. Guru Applause still thinks you're a seamstress. Plus, I don't remember what that means. Plus, when I was here, second year was crazy hard. Shoot, they're easy on you, no see, Bellas. This year was easy? Tookie sputtered in disbelief. CL nodded, moonlight dancing on her face. But from here on out, it gets insane.
No.
So the body horror, the blood, the magnets, like the, you know, strangulation. This is just a walk in the park compared to how it gets.
So Seal's like, you thought I was self-flagellating before.
Right.
I'm going to like literally rip my own spine out and hit you with it. That's how horrible this is going to be.
The Whip of Thorns is going to be dog shit, so it infects the wounds even more. So that's...
You're going to be running through those punji sticks that they take pig crap and smear all over.
Yeah, the waterboarding every week. But yeah, but CL,
diseases.
She's in charge now. But she says, still, mark my words, your Segunda year will be like hell in heaven. But, you know, it's there's nothing she can do to change it. It's just...
And that's it?
Yeah. It's just like if Harry Potter took over the school and was like, yeah, but kids are still going to die here.
Wow.
She tells Tookie she's special, which makes Tookie's jaw drop. Someone else told me that exact same thing once, she whispered, remembering wingtips, uplifting words from a year ago. It made sense that CL had nearly echoed him. Wingtip, Ray Fay, was her father after all. But he's still homeless and destitute and assumes his daughter is dead, I guess.
Oh my gosh. All right. So this ends as though like someone was kind of infiltrating, you know, Pol Pot's dynasty or something. But then at the end, he's like, yeah, it has been a rough year, I have to admit, with that big purge and those killing fields. But next year, it's going to be even worse.
Yeah, throws their fist in the air and Simple Minds plays as a freeze frame.
Yes, freeze frame, smiling, laughing.
But then CL gives her a smize, asks her if she wants to fly someone with her and emphasizes, but not in a pouch, which whatever. And then it Tookie, we see her final journal entry, which, you know, it's this... It's actually like, it's like in theory, the crux of the book, which is like a commencement speech or TED talk that Tyra was never invited to give. Because it's like, maybe you hate your reflection or everyone thinks you're the prettiest, but you still feel ugly. Maybe you're under intense pressure that you think you can never overcome. Maybe someone tells you daily you aren't smart and skinny or talented or good enough. It's like that for a couple pages.
Yeah. Okay.
And it's like, you, I'll be your vessel. I'll take all that hate. I'll live. I'll hold it for you. Like, you can be free because I'm holding the hurt. And signs it RG Tookie, which is remains a mystery for about a page and a half. Because CL is like, oh boy, I'm feeling my teleportation power coming up. Like, you're free to stay here, but you can come with me. I don't know where we're going. And they, she's like, I want to do it. And they go through some magic portal in the ground. And then it reveals that RG stood for Remember Girl instead of Forget a Girl.
Ugh.
And that's, you know, that's it. That's how Model Land ends. Off on an adventure before her second year, which will never obviously be ever be published.
So it ends with kind of like a Rick and Morty thing.
Yeah, right. There,
I might be going someplace really horrible, Morty.
Okay,
you want to come
Rick,
with me?
Just a...
No, seriously, you're gonna get your pancreas ripped
don't
out.
Don't take
by
me to the probing planet, Elise.
Sharp toenails.
No, that's fine. You know, I love you though.
Don't be a pussy, Morty.
Okay,
sometimes
fine.
You gotta
I'll
get
go
your
with
pancreas
you. It's
pulled
fine.
Out
I just, this year was really hard, and it seems like you're intimating it's gonna last a bit longer.
This is the end of the story, Morty. No, shut up.
Fine, I'll keep talking over the credits, though. That's sort of what we do here.
We're meta. We break the fourth wall.
Wow.
That's it. That's how the story ends. There's we made it. It's a just what a journey.
I'm really glad I didn't have to write.
I mean, there was a lot of filth, a lot of crud, a lot of more body horror. So it delivered in those things. It didn't really resolve a lot of the things we thought it might, but it resolved a lot of the things we weren't even aware needed to be resolved. So
yeah, as when I read the last ones, I regretted that you weren't able to read. I'm glad you got to the Mordor stuff, mm-hmm. with people
yep,
just being
that was
like,
great.
Churned up and killed and all of that. And none of that really resolves, like the whole, the hairy girls and everything, the one who was shaved nude yep. and then she just gets killed.
Yeah.
No redemption.
What are their families thinking back where they were? Like, they're just like, we're going to go get their body someday. This I vow. So he dies too. I don't know.
Right. Can you take a helicopter up there and get in and retrieve the body? Or is it just kind of like, an unmarked grave? I don't know.
Monster made of feet would probably like rear back and do a Godzilla roar and crash your helicopter, I'm guessing.
Right. Yeah.
Wow. Where does it rank for you in the oof? Like,
okay. I'm going to say it's well below Tech Wars.
Mm-hmm.
It's above.
Is that sort of your gold standard of readable? Like,
well, no. I guess like Jim Tice and stuff is at the top in terms of just like fun and.
Yeah.
I think we got I got a little weary with Dwight David Thrash. I probably liked Moon People had a lot of good stuff and didn't hang around too long.
What about
right?
something like Digital Fortress or The Mister?
Oh, those hung around too long as well. That shared that with these, where they're just like, okay, we understand what this is. Mm-hmm. Nothing new is happening. I mean, maybe Digital Fortress had at least had a plot that tumbled forward. Uh-huh. Not that it was good. So I guess there was that. We had revelations to give. This one is a little more confusing.
Yeah, it was more confusing. Yeah. So I think I would rate those two above it for me in terms of just being a book that I at least could relate to in terms of... I didn't feel a lot of sympathy for the sex slaves in, having said that, that sounds bad. Don't isolate that clip. The Mister.
I'm just going to mark it down. Okay.
ones in The Mister, it was like, obviously it was a cartoonish fantasy. But at least I got what they were getting at. Every time bad things happened in this book, I was like, everyone's just so disgusting and awful that it makes it harder to do it. But I think I did like it better than Bob Honey.
Yeah, I would put it above Bob Honey, but pretty low. Oh, yeah. Where would you rank it with Shadow Moon?
I'd rank it above that. I think at least it had the pacing was better, even though it was still long. Shadow Moon was just like this grind, and like you said, the Tolkien-y sort of descriptions of things.
Yeah, okay. I'll rank it above Shadow Moon.
What about Klein's books?
Man, I hate his books so much. That's a tough one. Yeah.
Does the shortness make it easier to palate?
A little bit, but not. I don't know, man. That's tough. I'd have to weigh that. I think those are the gold standard for bad for me.
At least Tyra got to write her books because she was famous and succeeded in a incredibly difficult industry to succeed in. Worked hard to get there. Obviously, based on this book being a semi, not even. Obvious, in self-insert character, she had some rough patches. So that's why she was able to write this book, because she, succeeded in everything else. Klein just wrote that book and people were like, good, you can keep writing them.
Yes.
So, yeah. You tip your hat much more to her than you do to him.
Yep, there is that. The length of it was tough, though.
Yep, that's, that you'll keep coming back to that. And for...
Lair of the White Worm.
Oh, wow. Huh.
Above or below?
I think this is below. I think just in terms of there being a lot more weird stuff. Where All That Worm was funny because it was old-timey and we found stuff in there. But yes. Overall, I think if you isolated that, there was a lot less insane stuff in it than we really made it out to. There's a bird kite, there's walnuts, but I'm looking at the thing here. We spent four or five episodes on that. Jeez. Anyway.
I'm going to assume that Trucking Through Time is well above
it's high
us.
Up there for me, but
yeah, same here.
I think that looking at these, and the Quilter's book is high up there.
The Quilter's book is way high for me. Yeah.
Jeez, I'm trying to remember what else we did. Anyway, I think that's a good summation of where it fits. It sort of sticks out in its own thing, you know?
Yeah.
But
all right, so above Pappy.
Oh, yeah.
Below all those other things, whatever. That I'd say lower.
Above Klein for you.
Lower third.
Okay. Let's do some dumb sentences.
A sentence begins with a capital letter. A capital letter is a letter that's big. A capital letter is not a small letter. A capital letter is big, big, big. A sentence.
So these will be the dumb sentences of the week. Final dumb sentences of the week of Model Land. And obviously, a lot of these people who wrote these in were our Patreon supporters. Who thank you for sticking with us through this weird, weird journey through the world of Miitopia.
Yes, thank you for those of you who read it, but for those of you who didn't even read it, yeah. I always say that. It's you know, thank you.
Yeah, there's a lot of you know, people out there that don't do that. And someone wrote in saying that they had listened, a complete re-listen of the entire catalog 6 times.
Hmm.
So that's, you know, we reward you for doing that, hopefully with some Patreon stuff. Among Patreon bonuses, someone sent me a crate of Smize cream.
Right, yeah. You sent me that. I'm like, someone sent me this, and I thought it was just a picture of it. I'm like, oh, I didn't know that existed. Cool. It's like, no, they actually sent you the ice cream.
A giant box, 6 pints of Smize cream. There's, it's pretty crazy. It's not necessarily super Model Landy branded. There's, in fact, one of them is a Lionel Richie flavor, which doesn't really like work into. I'm trouble figuring out how he exists in the world of Miitopia. But we got some good sounding flavors, like the best vanilla I've ever had, caramel cookie queen, strawberry birthday cake. And then we've got purple cookie Monstar and me and chocolate barbecue. So we'll see how those stack up. But that was Nathaniel who sent me those. I'm grateful. We'll do a tasting video in a week or two.
No seal flavored?
No, I feel like she was sort of like, they were like, you can have your own ice cream, but we're not, you know, no one's getting stabbed. We're not having any references to human waste or rotting flesh on it. But they do have, each one does contain a surprise inside.
Oh, what is that?
I mean, we'll figure out. We're hosting a 3-year-old's birthday party here next weekend, so I'm gonna let my niece do some of the tasting with it to make the process a bit more adorable. So we'll figure that out.
Okay. But thank you. So it's not like it can't be anything dangerous.
I mean, speaking of that, I did manage to hurt myself opening the ice cream because there's dry ice in the pouch, and you shouldn't touch that. And it says that on the thing, and I touched it, and it, like, you know, in Men in Black, they remove your fingerprints. That's what it felt like. Yeah.
I think MC Hammer was pretty clear about that. Can't touch this.
But yeah, that's Patreon. It's patreon.com/372pages. You'll be the first to figure out what we're reading next, and you get everything else early. You get all sorts of other fun stuff. So please join support over there if you like what we're doing. Let's do the sentences.
All right.
Elizabeth submitted, feelings like waves of intense ecstasy crashed into her, surrounding her with the most magnificent smells and tastes and sounds ever heard. And the way that's written is there's no, it's like a bad Oxford comma thing. It's like smells, tastes, and sounds ever heard. So she's somehow hearing the smells and tastes. Ben submitted, there's an intruder in my ooh-ah. And his commentary for that was, I read this section while I was sick with COVID, and this was worse than COVID. So there you go.
Wow.
Get well soon, Ben. Hayden submitted, the final dumb sentence of the book, the origin of the word Miitopia.
Sure. Yep.
Janelle and Damien both submitted, as we say at the Boo Big Tick Nation, you boo break it, you boo buy it, baby. Just have to keep in mind she is exposing her ass at her prodigious ass at that part of the book.
Mm-hmm.
Mike submitted, Tookie felt like she was trapped in a surrealist crystal painting. And Mike provided a breakdown of why he found that so dumb. First of all, it's of course very Kleinian. He says, you've seen surrealist paintings? Yeah, it looked like that. But even more strange that it appears to be like a surrealist painting to a character. That means surrealism as an art genre exists in this world. How is that possible? Even outside Model Land, the most bizarre crap imaginable is going on and people accept it as normal. Students lie like area rugs in school highways, which have vents that belch green gas. Golden eyeglasses squirt out of water spigots. Circus acrobats impale their eyes while bowing. What exactly is getting portrayed in a painting that gets it put in the surrealism wing of a museum?
Would, yeah, maybe it would be just the most normal, like, several well-dressed men getting on a train, I guess, would be, or something.
Yeah, you know? It's a Norman Rockwell painting, and they're like, how surreal.
Wow, that is bizarre. Eating a turkey.
Harris submitted, who knew the old dump had once looked so good? And he says, because when you're going on a flashback journey through your mother's tortured past, your focus should really be how good your school looked a couple years ago. Steve submitted, this must be Shiraz. I flipped the bird to democracy. I forget what the democracy was all about. Someone must have been taking a vote.
Interesting.
This is LaTanya. It's said right after Tyra tells us that CL's head is in a guillotine. They were going to behead CL, is what Tookie thinks. But then again, it only looked like what might be a guillotine, so she still could be uncertain. And as we saw, not the fastest on the uptake.
No.
Jay submitted, for a moment, her face flickered between pure hatred and undying loyalty, but it settled on resentment. He said, I can't for the life of me picture what this looks like, much less what it looks like happening in a single moment.
I guess a casino machine, right? Yeah. Like, come on, cherries.
Slots?
Come on.
Yeah. It's a false range, as Lauren calls it. It's pure hatred and undying loyalty. They're not really on the same spectrum. Lan submitted, this is from the acknowledgments, which people said were crazy, but I was like, it's a lot to ask reading five pages of acknowledgments in small print once you've taken this journey. But one of the acknowledgments was Tyra saying, it was a real treat for me to read a section of Model Land for half an hour to children who didn't speak English.
What?
She like globetrotted. She talks about like, I wrote this section in Lake Como at like, you know, Clooney's house. I traveled to, a place where children didn't speak English and sat and read the Model Land.
Wow. So our little fantasies of reading to the little girls.
I guess so.
100% true.
Yeah, I'm sure that even though they couldn't read, they probably picked up that they should be appalled at what was happening.
Wow.
Andrew submitted, everything seemed like it was happening in both slow and sped up motion. So again, picture that. John submitted, LaDonna creamy hissed. And he hissed. He said, one of my pet peeves is when an author hissed something, which is plainly unhissable. There is no S sound here. And Taylor submitted, we covered this one, but Lord have mercy, Percy, that queen bitch sure did curse thee. That was Creamy saying that after revealing that the persimmon had been pretty much condemned to a life of mannequin-esque servitude by sticking up for her friend.
That's the second time I've heard it, and I involuntarily was shaking my head like the, you know, waving off a sign from a catcher, like, no.
The only one I had that I didn't talk about in real time was, I think this is the Queen Belladonna saying something like, but she says, defecake, do not try to pin this crap on me. Which is just imagining like a gym teacher when you call her by her last name. Defecake, drop it, give me 20. It's absurd.
Also, defecake and crap in the same sentence. Exactly. I'm sure she patted herself on the back, but not worth it.
And we have a few emails that we can read from people summing up their experiences with the book.
We're going to the party. We're going to the game. We're going to the disco. We're going to cruise out, man.
Well, the first one, what he does is from Lucas, checking in with our updated Real or Fanfic statistics.
Mm-hmm.
He says that Mike's performance started off shaky, but was able to make it up in the second half and ended with a score of 15 out of 26 for a 57.69%. This is fairly standard for a book of this length. Mike answered as many questions for Ready Player 2 and achieved a score of 54.17%. Connor performed one round of Real or Fanfic and got a 4 out of 5. The overall scores have not changed much. Mike's total average is 58%, so you dropped by 0.03 percentage points. Connor's total average is 65.82, dropped 1 percentage point. And if you're wondering about the disparity, Mike has, at time of writing, answered 300 questions of Real or Fanfic. Think about it. Just ponder that quietly for a minute. That's insane. Connor has answered 79, most of them from Ernest Klein books, which is odd. For reference, by the end of 64 squares, Mike had answered almost 81 questions with a hit rate of 59.26. So my current rate is 65, so it's close enough. That's like one question for me would probably change that.
Right, not bad. I mean, what is the weather report? It's, you know, just over 50%, right? There are predictions of rain or snow or whatever. Yeah. So, yeah, not bad.
Hayden wrote in. This was something we've obviously talked about. I think I broke the news to you this week, but he said, not Model N related, but I was shocked and saddened to hear the great Norm MacDonald had died. We were as well. He said, with the B-O-R-E-D in the book, and reference being made to Norm's iconic bit when he, you know, it's referencing Nuts on Conan to Carrot Top's chairman of the board. I assume you guys are fans too. We were, and I was pleased to see that people were posting, someone, you know, posted in the Facebook group. They're like, with as much as he's come up on the podcast, like, we should just, you know, pay our respects here. So I'm glad that our respect and admiration came across just through our talking about him. He says, to me, the pinnacle of Norm's career was his novel, which I loved. Have either of you read it? Did you either of you ever meet him? Any favorite bits? I did read the book a while ago and thoroughly enjoyed it.
I have not read it. I have to put it in my reading list. I unabashedly loved Norm. I think he's one of the greatest comedians and just a great mind. And just very few people are individuals who just do their own thing. Mm-hmm. And to watch him in his entire career never alter from that was just like very inspiring. He will be missed.
Yeah, I was telling someone, I was like, I don't get, I'm not a guy who's like, you know, the voice of the chief on Fish Police dies, I'm like, God damn it, 2021. But I, you know, as far as anything has made me disappointed and upset, Norm's was one that did that. And yeah, I think it was just because it was always a, you know, reassuring presence. He wasn't like he was constantly, you were seeing him, but you know, he'd pop up every year doing something new and you'd be excited about it. And I always appreciated sharing it with, you know, you and other people that I knew admired it. And it was always felt like you were in on something a little secret, because he wasn't like he was a leading man, you know, he wasn't making Adam Sandler kind of movies. But obviously the outpouring that everyone had 3 days ago was like, oh no, like people fucking loved him. And you know, they said the same thing. It was just a unique presence and yeah, someone who we missed. But the book is great. And my friend Nookie is bringing it on the rafting trip to give to our other friend, because the friend said it's predictably sold out on Amazon. So,
well, and I'll just add very quickly, I did have one encounter with Norm, because he was, you know, famously pretty, obviously pretty private. We know that after the fact now, very private. Yeah. But even his friends used to say, you know, you can see on podcast David Spade, like, I think I'm one of his best friends. I text him, and then like 4 days later, I get a, hey, what's going on with you, man? You know, like, yeah, I texted you to do something. Anyway, so we somehow got Norm's number in the early days of Riff Tracks, because I said I want to do, I would love to do one with him. And it seems like, I heard him in an interview once say, like, I pretty much do anything anyone asks me, because what else am I going to do? So we called him, and our producer at the time got a hold of him. And then in the morning, he came into my office, the producer, and said, yeah, somebody left a fake email doing a fake Norm impression on our phone. I don't know. Do you want to listen to it? And I listened to it. And it was Norm.
Yeah, I remember.
Just like in the morning, you know, just woke up like, yeah, I got this call. I don't do a Norm impression. It sounds like it's a fun thing to do. Yeah, sure. We'll do it. You know, whatever.
Yeah.
And then calling him back and nothing ever happened. And I was like, are you kidding me? Norm was like half interested in this. So that is as close as I got to Norm. But even that delights me.
It's a funny way to do that. Because that was when we recruited like Fred Willard and Weird Al. We sent out some aspirational, you know, Jennifer Aniston, Jerry Seinfeld. And then Norm called back and it was like, I can't believe this is happening. Like, we've been doing Riff Tracks for 6 months. And, you know, I was at a glasses factory, you know, a year before this, and now I'm going to be in a booth with Norm. Like, so.
Right. Yeah. Anyway, never happened. Deep regrets, but man, I love the guy.
Yeah. I'm pleased that it came across to people listening. This person is Mike. He says, on a final note, I was playing Psychonauts 2 at the same time I was reading Model Land. I forgot we were talking about Model Land. Why can't we just talk about Norm? In that game, you have to dodge the projectile vomit of giant anthropomorphic goats, grab undigested food items from the aforementioned vomit, chuck them into a vacuum tube, which assembles them into a prepared meal to feed back to said goats, causing them to explode from overeating and thus win a cooking competition. Model Land was weirder.
That's a, I assume that's a real thing.
Yeah, yeah. I played Psychonauts 1. I don't remember it being that weird. But
wow, okay.
This one's from Harris. He said, I know you mentioned in the last episode people had backed out or didn't want to deal with this book anymore. I personally wanted to thank you. That was an experience I never expected nor wanted, but it'll stick with me more than many of your other books or any other books. Okay. Tyra has a lot to work through. Yeah, I guess, you know, things that stick with you are, it takes something to happen. I mean, obviously, severe trauma would stick with you, but...
Yeah, she's got a lot of things to work through. And as you were, like, rolling down the final points of the book, I just want to point out again, we've mentioned it before, that this was pared down quite a bit.
Right, yes. She said
so you were doing those, like, so this gets wrapped up, this gets crashed into a pole, this person belongs to this, and the end. But remember,
yeah,
she might have gone on. Who knows how that was dispersed? Yep. Who knows how many chapters in the school or whatever, but at least by half, mm-hmm. I think.
Yeah, they could have been like...
1,000 pages plus, she said.
It could have been like, you know, Gunnero Nars opened the door, Tookie stared in horror. This is where the goo for the pouch comes from, he said. And it's like, you know, they're like milking a buffalo or something. I don't know. but yeah, so there's a lot to go through, which makes me think there could be a director's cut somewhere. Maybe someone will leak it or something. It'll be like the day the clown cried or something.
Right.
Let's see. We have a couple more. This one is from Matthew. He says, during a safety class at my technical school, I heard a true story about an electrician that got caught in an arc flash, which is an electrical explosion that releases heat greater than the surface of the sun. Mm-hmm. At first, the only thing the electrician noticed was a faint screaming in the distance. As his senses slowly returned, he realized he was the one screaming. The blast had torn into his flesh and left him covered in head to toe in third-degree burns. All this to say, extreme system shock can cause a person to completely detach from their own reactions. So when a protagonist hears himself scream or feels a goofy grin crawl onto his face, it's probably because his body has responded to an event by going into severe shock.
Okay.
Yeah, so there's a definition of that, and that seems about... You got to dial that up if you want something like that to happen at Model Land. That's way too benign. If you want to scare a 7-year-old girl going to bed, you gotta getting burned by something hotter than the surface of the sun probably isn't going to cut it.
Yeah, because she would, you know, how hot is the surface of the sun?
Yeah, oh, it's so hot.
I've never been there.
Yeah, it would, you know, it would melt your teddy bear.
Oh, no, I want to keep my time.
This one's from Taylor. I think this is the last email. Taylor says, you guys have talked before about how you like to alternate between two types of books on the show. Type A books are the wide-release, professionally published books that, bad as they are, seem to conform to industry standards. Type B books are the self-published books by amateurs with no limitation but the author's insane imagination. Model Land feels like a Type B book that, through the outrageous power and wealth of its author, forced itself onto the Type A list. It's as if Dwight David Thrass were also the owner of Amazon and demanded all Kindles to come preloaded with Titus Uno books. I doubt Tyra even realizes her fame and clout, not her writing talent, or what allowed this book to get published at all. The most unintentionally interesting and revealing chapters in the whole book is the acknowledgments. It takes a big lack of self-awareness to tack on 6 more pages to your already overlong book, just describing the decadent food you ate and exotic hotels you stayed at while writing it. I don't think she sees the irony in writing a book for girls with low self-esteem and then describing a lifestyle beyond the dreams of most mortals. Still, I say this with deep shame. I did not hate this book. I resisted it first, but by the time they got to models turned into cats, I said, you know what? I'm choosing to embrace the insanity. Yes, they get turned into cats. Of course they do. And then from on, I felt indestructible. I surrendered to the madness and actually quite enjoyed it. Mind you, I am not saying the book is good by any definition, but it was never boring and somehow kept coming up with new, baffling, batshit insanity up to the final page. And I kind of respect that. So that's sort of what we summed up. I mean, you know, powerful.
Yeah,
person.
I'll give it that. I'll just say, I think there's a level, maybe if you're just reading it and you don't have to care that much, that maybe it could turn that for me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, not having to read it and hearing you describe it, I'm like, yeah, that's good. That's fun. But actually having to, like, pay attention to it is a little bit, that's a different level.
Yep, I think
so. I won't say that I enjoyed it, but I sort of agree with that sentiment.
Sure. Difference between difficult to read and difficult to make funny for people listening. But I think we hopefully
Correct.
Did a good job. But that's our emails. Yeah. And that's Model Land. So, wow.
There we go. I feel like, so something came up, I'll bring it up, we don't have to do it, but
a short thing on the acknowledgments, mm-hmm. where we take a little rest.
Yeah, yeah. And then we can come back. That. We'll do that.
We could do that.
Take some smiles.
And then
clean.
We also have to. Yeah, and then we have to also obviously pick a next book.
Yeah, we got
to
do that. And excuse me. I found.
Is that the ice cream? Did you just hit on the secret?
I licked the dry ice. Damn it. Why did I do that? It had no hands on the thing. My mom unloaded a bunch of stuff that they had like in their basement. And I've got a book. I mean, a book. A story I wrote in fourth grade and a story I wrote in sixth grade. So we can maybe touch those on Patreon too. The book is a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles parody. So I'll bet to you. And it had a. I read through it. It had a line that I was sort of proud of. So.
Oh, okay.
We'll delve into those in between that and the next book.
All right.
Well, thanks, everybody.
Well, thank you, everyone.
A lot of dry ice. Don't lick
Connor's
dry ice.
Connor's going to die. So I will be doing this solo from now on. Connor is dead. He's laying in a pool of his own blood.
Oh, yeah.
He choked on a raisin that turned into a claw and rent his throat, and bile and mucus and filth are streaming out on the floor now. But R.I.P. Connor, and... R.I.P. Norm. I'll be back solo. So long. So long.
Thanks, everybody.